going to the contender after Freddie Roach.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. Live? Boom, we're live. You want to wear headphones or no?
Yeah. It's better like this, right?
Do you wear, are your cauliflower ears, they keep you from wearing earbuds? You know those little things that go in your ear?
I need to wear? No, I don't need it.
You don't need it. You don't have to. I don't have to. Just keep this close to your face and we're good.
All right.
There we go. What's up, man? How are you?
Fantastic.
You look good.
I feel good. I feel if it would not be for my ulcer that I had, I feel better than when I was 25.
What did you have? You had colitis?
Yeah, colitis. Yeah.
What is that? What causes that?
We don't really know what it causes, but the best theory is that before my last fight with Michael Bisping, I tried to put on weight, extra weight. So I followed a diet program that I was eating almost every 2 hours. And I think your system is like a car. You know, if you do a lot of mileage, it overuse it. And so that's what happened with the stress and everything. During my training camp, I had big problem. You know, I couldn't sleep. I had crazy cramps, you know, sometimes. And I had blood. Even like that when I went to the bathroom, at one point I had to go do some tests because I was worried that it was something more, colitis is very serious, but that it was like cancer or something because it had blood. So I did some tests. It came out negative, and I said to myself, this fight being postponed so many times that if I do something, if I say that publicly what is going on, I'm going to lose the opportunity to fight for the title at 185. So I keep it shut. And I told myself, whatever it is, I'll deal with it after the fight. So I did the fight. Everything went well. Then after I went to do, it's called a colonoscopy. They put a camera inside of you.
Yeah.
And I got diagnosed with ulcer colitis. That's probably the mix of the stress and also the fact that I was
constantly eating.
I was eating, and not only eating, Joe, I was trying to put on some weight. It was very hard. Sometimes I remember many times I was having breakfast, but I was regurgitating my breakfast. Oh. Like chewing up.
Because you were just eating too much food.
Yeah, but I had to because I needed to keep myself in a certain weight. And the crazy thing about it is, first, now I realize it's a mistake. I should never have done it. But when I made the weight at 185 the day before the fight, I could not go back up to 190. That's the highest I was going back up. So the day of the fight, I woke up and I had a little breakfast. I threw up my breakfast again.
Wow.
Yeah, I was really messed up. Then I went to weigh myself. I was like 190 wow. pounds. Yeah.
And what do you think Mike weighed?
He felt very strong. I mean, it's not really the weight at this time because the way that you weigh right now, depending what you eat, you have a lot of stuff inside your intestine and everything. So and also water retention. I felt like I had a lot of water retention. Mm. And
unnecessary weight.
Exactly. So it's like dead weight. It's like a bag that you carry on your shoulder. So what I should have done, I think, is just stay the same way that I am, my natural weight. I think the body has a weight that it's best weight to perform an athletic performance, and that's what I should have done.
Right.
But it was a mistake of my part. It was a big mistake.
So you were just thinking that because you're going up to 185 and you're fighting a guy in Bisping that used to fight at 205.
Exactly.
He's a pretty big guy.
Exactly. I thought that to perform better, I needed to elevate my weight. But by doing that, I create a big problem of health issues. So
and that colitis didn't exist before that.
Not that I got diagnosed for. No, no. And I think that's what triggered it.
And so after the fight, now that you've gone back to a normal diet, has it changed?
So after the fight, what happened? And it's very interesting. I got on medication, and I met a doctor. His name is Jason Fung. He's in Toronto. People can research. He's an amazing guy. And I met a doctor that treat people with cancer and diabetes with intermittent fasting. So I start doing a program of intermittent fasting and time-restricted eating, and all my symptoms diminish. Like every weeks, every month, it diminished. So it's getting better. It's not 100% now, but it's getting a lot better. A lot better. And I feel a lot better.
A lot of people eat like that now. We had Ben Greenfield on yesterday,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, he's a a journalist does a lot of experimenting with his body, done a lot of scientific stuff and scientific research on diet and restricted eating is a big part of it. He does a lot of that.
It's interesting because we're conditioned to think that I want to gain muscle. I need to eat more to accelerate my metabolism. Yeah. But I never felt better in my life. If it would not be for that particular issue, I feel better now. I sleep better. Inflammation, and I also did a test in January. I went to McGill University to do a scan of my weight, my fat percentage, my muscle density, bone density, and in 5 months. I did it a few days ago, not this week, the Tuesday of the last week, and my fat percentage has decreased, my muscle mass has increased, and my weight is at the same than it was in January.
And you think this is all from restricted eating?
My training did not have changed. So the only thing that's changed pretty much is the restricted time eating and intermittent fasting, yes.
Yeah, that intermittent fasting gives your digestive system a break and it lets your body recuperate better.
I think that's what it helped me the most. Yeah, I think that's what it is. I felt like a car. I was just putting too much for nothing. And I think as human beings, we're overfed. Yeah. I'm very interested about paleontology and also history. And I know that human being in hunter-gatherer time did not eat 3 meals a day.
No, they
eat maybe a few times a week. But when they eat a lot
because
they need to do it fast. So I think it's more natural for a human being to do so. And also I read a lot of stuff and I watch a lot of stuff on the internet about intermittent fasting and time restricted eating, and I just wish I knew that before. For so many years I used to follow the rules. Oh, we need to eat at least 3 times a day, and you know, I don't really care of what I eat, but even though in the morning I was not hungry. I was always forcing myself to eat, which is bad, you know.
Yeah. What has changed in your diet? Like, what do you eat? Like, what's a normal meal for you?
I don't really watch what I eat anymore. It's more when I eat. I try to eat healthy, but I don't have a specific diet. Tuesday I'm gonna eat this.
Yeah.
That's not how it works. I just try to eat healthy, you know, like I try to eat good. And of course, I don't look at, oh, this is a dessert. I'm, you know, if I want a dessert, a chocolate, I'll get it.
I remember that from one of your old videos, like you were having a glass of wine during training camp. You're like, oh, there's nothing wrong with one glass of wine.
Well, if you think about it, Joe, I don't think a glass of wine or anything, like, you know, before a fight, we have the tendency to be too much like, oh, what should I eat? What should I do this? Should I do that? I think it's...
Too tense,
exactly.
Yeah.
When I went in Thailand, I met some world champion Thai boxer, and they smoke, they get drunk before the fight. I'm like, you're fighting tomorrow, man. It's like, it's no problem. But when you think about it, this is an extreme. This is to the other extreme.
Yes.
But I don't think it has that much of an effect. You know what I used to eat before, like before a fight, my meal of choice, before I got into reading about eating and stuff like that, I was eating pasta before a fight. Most of my fight, I eat like fettuccine Alfredo.
That's a lot of carbs. I mean, it seems like not
bad.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's not bad. But like, if you talk to, for example, a nutritionist, it will be like, oh my God, it will grab his head. It will be like, are you serious? Oh my God.
Mike Tyson used to eat that. He used to eat a steak and pasta before his fights.
That was my thing. I used to eat pasta all the time, and there's no problem with that for me. And I felt great. But since I start reading about nutrition and stuff like that, it's like, oh, you need to eat clean, nah. I'm like, it never affect me. I don't think it has that much of a big effect. You know, it's more psychological, I think.
Well, it's also you think about how much energy you're burning. You know, I think for the average person, a bowl of pasta is not a good idea. But for an athlete that's about to fight five-minute rounds against a world-class fighter, you have different energy requirements. You know, you have different nutrition requirements. You can burn off way more fuel. You know, like I was listening to Chad Mendez on a podcast the other day. And he was talking about how he's so hungry, he eats so much, that he has to wakes up in the middle of the night and he goes and eats sometimes.
Wow.
He just can't, he can't go a couple hours without eating. He just has this crazy metabolism.
You know what? Since I discovered time restricted eating and intermittent fasting, now I feel better by training with an empty stomach. I feel sharper up here. I feel more creative. Especially in jiu-jitsu, I feel better. I feel lighter on my feet.
Really?
Yeah,
so,
man.
Like, you do like first jiu-jitsu class in the morning, no food in your stomach?
I never have a food. I haven't eaten today. This is the coffee you give me is the first thing I have.
So when will you eat? It's 12:24 right now.
But after this, I'm gonna go train with Freddie Roach, and then I'm gonna.
And then you'll eat.
Then I'll eat.
Wow.
And maybe I'll eat another time. I'm a late eater. That's one thing. I'm not too good. I don't like to eat too much early during the day.
Yeah.
I'm not really hungry. I used to eat because everybody eat, but now I'm like, I'm not going to eat since I've discovered this. I don't eat when I'm not hungry. And the thing is, why people eat is because they're a spike of insulin, you know?
Yeah.
So when you, like when I start doing intermittent fasting and time restricted eating, it was hard in the beginning because I was conditioned to eat all the time.
Yeah.
But my body acclimate to it. And now it's very easy. I can eat once a day. It's no problem. Like right now, you know, I could do it. And I think it's good to be hungry in a way. I remember the doctor said something to me. He said, would you rather be like a lion that just had a full belly or an angry lion? I'm like, as a fighter, I'd rather be like a hangry lion. And it makes sense to me. If you look at nature, it makes sense. You know what I mean?
It does make sense, especially when you do time-restricted eating. Your body gets used to burning off fat, too, and using fat as fuel.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. That's why I think when I did the test to compare, my fat percentage diminished.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have much fat, but it diminished. And the doctor I met, I says to him, I said, yeah, I gained a lot of weight. He said, don't you think I'm going to lose muscle? He says to me, he believed that the weight that I put on, because now I'm about 185 pounds, and when I trained for Bisping, I went up to 197. When I after the weigh-in, I couldn't put back that weight up, so I was 190. He believed that the extra weight that I had was more water retention and residual inside my body. It was not like a solid mass, and it makes sense to me because now I feel much better, and I'm just as strong and even stronger. Like when I do Olympic lifting, much stronger. Gymnastic, much stronger. Like I feel sharper.
Yeah, and you said it reduced your inflammation as well.
It does. I have sometimes elbows, you know, like problems.
You used to have always that big inflated elbow. Like
yes.
A swollen elbow. What was that?
It was a...
bursitis or something?
It was a bursitis. That was during my fight of Thiago Alves, but I got a surgery to take away the residual, the bone chip inside my elbow.
Is and that from landing elbows or from getting
I think
kicked?
It's just uses.
Just using it?
But now I don't have any problem anymore. I don't feel any, like it used to be a chronic thing that I used to feel some once in a while. Sometimes it came and it goes. But since I start this, it didn't came. At all, I feel great. I can touch my two shoulder like this. No,
when you came back, it's very interesting because with a lot of people, they take time off and then they come back and you wonder what they're going to look like. But one of the things that I was very hopeful with you is that you've always been almost a martial artist first and a fighter second. And in that you're always learning and you're always practicing. Like you would always take time in between camps. And you would, you know, do jiu-jitsu in Brazil, or you would be constantly practicing your Muay Thai. You're always trying to learn and improve your game. And I was thinking when you came back, I was like, if you were saying that you were better than ever, I'm like, man, he might be better than ever. Like, you're the one guy that I believed. Because a lot of times guys come back, you're like, man, he's been out of the game a long time. Who knows how hard he's been training? Because a lot of fighters, when they're not in camp, when they're not preparing for a fight, they don't like to train that much because the grind of camp almost wears on. Like, you know how you see a lot of fighters after they retire, they get really fat?
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, how could he get fat? Like, I was looking at Maidana the other day. There's a picture of Maidana's Chino Maidana. He's got his Instagram page. He's fat as fuck. He's got a cigar. He's drinking a whiskey. I mean, he just fought Floyd Mayweather a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And he was ripped. And they retire and they don't give a fuck anymore. They're like, I don't want to do this anymore. But you, I knew you were still training. Because I would see, like, in the Henzo Gracie, the guys who were training with you there. And I knew you were training with Donaher. I knew you were constantly training and you looked good. So I was like,
When I left off, like more than 4 years ago, I knew I wanted to come back because I was not in an happy place. I had a lot of personal problems, and I should have even stopped earlier than after my fight with Hendrix. If I would have stopped earlier, I would have maybe come back earlier as well.
Mm.
I felt like I was like, kind of a feeling of a claustrophobic feeling, you know, like I couldn't breathe well, I couldn't sleep well, my mind.
Too much pressure?
Too much pressure, personal problems, so much stuff. A lot of stuff happened to me that it's still too early in my life, and for the respect of some people, I know I couldn't talk about it. One day I will. It's all mixed together, I knew it was a drug issue in the sport. I did feel well, and I was trying to perform under those conditions, and it was catching up to me.
Yeah.
And I did it. But the reason why I think I didn't lose the edge is a lot of people, because we do an extreme sport. It's like what we do is kind of a life and death situation. It's not because there's a referee, but the spirit is the same as a gladiator or a person in a war that goes to war, he thinks he's going to die. It's the same spirit, even though it's not the same thing. We go there in the same spirit that we're ready to give it all. It's such an extreme feeling that once you don't have that in your life, life kind of become boring. You feel like you're not alive anymore.
Yeah.
So that's why when people stop, they retired and they try to come back, a lot of the people, they fall into drugs because they want to catch up to that. They want to feel alive again, so they need that sensation that they had previously, but they couldn't get it back unless they do drugs or they do something crazy, extravagant. The thing with me is I knew I was going to come back, and also I always like to train and keep myself in shape, and I never did drugs, you know, like I never did hard drugs. I drink sometimes. For my birthday last Saturday, I went out and I was completely wasted. Okay, it is what it is. I like to deteriorate myself sometimes. I'm not perfect.
Just have a little fun.
Exactly. And what's the goal of doing this if you're not enjoying your life? What's the goal of it?
Right.
You know, people to fight, you say, no, I don't like to fight. And that's another thing I like to talk to you about. People say, why you do that if you don't like to fight? It's like, because I like my lifestyle, you know, that it gives me. But that's why people, I believe, if we come back to what you say, that's why I think people, they have a hard time to come back after so many years because they fall into that trap.
Right.
They need to feel alive, so they find ways that make them feel alive, but it's deteriorate themselves.
Yeah.
Drinking. And I didn't do that. I did not do that. And I would never will, hopefully. It's not my thing, you know?
So when you decided to come back, how far out did you decide? Like, but you took 4 years off.
Yeah.
How many years in were you like, I think I'm ready to come back?
When I see USADA and the drug testing program being implemented, then I saw a lot of people
deflate.
Yes, a lot
did
of
people. Did you feel vindicated?
Huh?
Like, did you feel vindicated when you saw, like, some of these people just...
I feel a little bit of it feels bad to wish people bad luck to get some kind of recognition, but that's not what I want to do. I don't wish people bad luck, but if you cheat, you cheat, man. And a lot of people got caught. And finally, a lot of people in the beginning, including my own friend, they think, like, I was talking to some of my own friend, and they say, oh, you're paranoid. You become paranoid. You need to take a break. You're going crazy. Just retire or get out, you know, you're paranoid. Because I was talking about it a long time before Hendrix, and everybody was disregarding me. But then when it happened, a lot of the champion fell, and a lot of the hero in the sport, they got pointed out with the fingers, hey, he's a cheater. So now it became real. So when I saw that happen, it was for me a beginning to start, and now it's time to come back, you know, because I'm a guy of if I said something, you know, that's become gonna, I'm gonna do it. I don't want to come back when the sport was dirty. That's one of my thing. And so when I decided to come back, I had a big talk with one of my trainers, John Denard, and I and Ferraz. They're my two main guy, and they're like my friend, my brother with me. I mean, I'm undefeated with these two guys. You know, they're like with, well, I need them when
that's
I fight.
Some serious knowledge between those two men.
And they mix together is crazy. You know, they're two different person, very different. They both have. They both studied philosophy. They're very interesting people for me to talk with because they have two different mentalities. You know, they see the world in different ways. So I like to have both of their expertise. And so John, he told me, he said, listen, he said, you always have three big criticizes when you were fighting. Just never went up of a weight class. You never, you people say that you're kind of boring, you're too much cerebral, technical, you don't want to take unnecessary risks, which make the fight boring. And also, you don't finish your opponent. You know, that was one of my big criticizes. So I decided to come back, and we changed the way I was training, because the way you train reflects the way you fight. You know, people say, oh, I'm not gonna train too hard. I'm gonna do this in training, but when it's time to fight, I'm gonna step up. There is no step up. You're just gonna do what you did every day, you know.
And right. That's
so I decided to change a few things and to correct those three things, and that's what happened. You know, I'm happy it worked out well, but that was my goal. I wanted to come back for something that excited me, something that was different, something that was unique and rare. You know, and I didn't want to come back to do the same thing I was doing before. And that's why I decided to come back.
When you came back, first of all, you came back, you fought a very tough guy, right? You fought a big Michael Bisping at 185 pounds. But what was impressive to me is, like, you didn't look like you were gone. Like, right away, it felt like you felt right back into the groove again. You didn't look out of place. You didn't look uncomfortable. And you were showing things, especially different things with your kicking and your movement that we hadn't seen from you before. Like, it looked like you had improved.
Oh, I was tested in the training. Like, even Ferraz, some of the guys, Ferraz went to tell them, like, he whispered to them, hey, if you knocked out George in sparring, I'll give you money, or, you know, things
really?
Like that. Yeah, man, it's like, he's crazy. Ferraz is crazy. Ferraz is my worst enemy in training sometimes, you know? he tell people, it's like, hey, if you beat Jay, if you hurt George, I'm gonna glorify you. You know, I'm gonna talk about you. You know, we're gonna be happy.
That's the opposite of what a lot of people think a training camp should be for a champion.
It depends what kind of, you know, we don't train like this every day. But for my hard sparring, when I'm training for a fight, I have 2 days. For my last training camp, I had 2 days that it was like hard sparring. That was called, we called it shoot box fighting, which we put the big gloves, the shin pad, and his feet to floor. Once we touch the floor, we stop and we go back up. And that was the area of expertise where Bisping was the most competent, the striking department. Mm-hmm. He's good on the floor, so I was bringing in a lot of good guys for sparring with me in that particular training. It's hard to find someone that is exactly like the guy you're going to fight, but you can find a guy that does things better than him in a particular area. You know, I cannot find a replica of Michael Bisping who's complete as much as Michael Bisping, but I can find a guy, for example, I had a guy coming from Spain. His name is Caesar. He's a K1 fighter, and he's a big guy. He's like 205 pounds, and he's big, and he's very, very good kickboxer. So I had him during my training camp. I flew him from Spain. Mm. Had a different bunch of guys that I was training with, and all these guys that I was training with, they are not like Michael Bisping, but in a certain area that I was training with them, it could be grappling or shoot box or different area, they could be just as good or maybe better than Michael Bisping. So that's how I do my training camp.
Yeah, you know, I remember when you brought, how do you say his last name, Skarbowski?
Jean-Charles Karboski.
What a character. What a character indeed. When you brought him to work with you on The Ultimate Fighter, and he would be partying all night, drunk, and show up at the gym the next day and still fuck everybody up.
Yeah.
And did that did that guy influence your idea about just being more relaxed in training and just not worrying about it as much?
Yeah, but he's a different, like, it's a total different extreme, you know? Yeah. Like I don't believe in that extreme. But Jean-Charles, yeah, I remember the producer of the show, The Ultimate Fighter, when he was supposed to stay 1 week, and when he was about to stay, the producer was telling me, hey, can we keep him for the rest of the show? I'm like, because it was good TV, you know?
Right, right.
So I'm like, I don't know, I'm going to ask him. And in the same time, like, a lot of the people on my team, they were like, man, okay, that's enough. Now we got what we need. And I was like, yeah, I like him, but he's kind of, you know, I need to kind of babysit him in the same time. But
yeah.
The knowledge that this guy had and he gave us was just a big edge, you know? And but yeah, Jean-Charles is a different extreme, Joe. I think there is a center line that you need to keep, you know? That's what I believe. I believe in life, it's not white, it's not black, it's always gray. Right. There's middle zone for everything, I believe.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. So when you have a camp and you set up a camp and you have Donaher and Faraz, did they essentially, are they the architects of the whole camp? Do they get together and try to figure out what you're doing and when you're doing it and how is Faraz the guy who handles like more of the striking aspects of it, or putting the grappling and the striking together?
I am a little bit the head guy, mm-hmm. in a way. You know, I believe as a fighter, you need to be the head guy. You're the maestro.
Right.
You have the people that work like with you, but you need to know how to use these people good. For instance, I don't know nothing about business. But I have agents that are there to negotiate fight. They knows number. They know about investment. I have another guy. He knows about fiscality. He's a lawyer and is good for a tax report. And I don't know nothing, but I know how to get the good people to help me for that particular thing.
Right, right, right.
So Faraz and John, for me, are the most competent people that I can have to help me going to fight someone, because in John, especially in the grappling area, but John is not only in grappling. The difference with John and Faraz that makes them very unique as trainers, they're not really only trainers, they're teachers. And I would say the same thing about Freddie Roach. They're not only trainers, they're teachers. The way I structure my training camp, there is like a pyramid. The first layer, the foundation is physical. Are you in shape? Are you, how's your VO2 max? Are you in shape? Are you in good condition? No injuries? Athleticism? Are you an athlete? Are you a good athlete? This is the physical layer. This is the wider one. That's the bottom one. It's like a pyramid. Then it goes up one layer. The technical layer. Do you know what to do? Your knowledge. Do you know an armbar? Defense to a triangle choke, how to counter a jab, or how do you, you know, technical aspect in terms of knowledge of fighting. That's where the trainer comes into play also. The physical, the technical. And a lot of the trainer, they don't have the last layer. Or they only have one of those or two of those, but they don't have the three layers. That's where Faraz, John, and also I would say Freddie in boxing comes into play. But in MMA, especially Faraz and John, the tactical layer, which is the last one, that's what separates contenders and champion. There's a physical, the technical, and the tactical. Let's say we're equal. We're the same person. What's going to make the difference between me winning against you or you winning against me is the tactical. Because we're the same person. We're a complete replica. We're a clone. The difference is the tactical. I will know where I can take you out of your comfort zone, and I can bring the fight where I'm the strongest and fight you to eliminate the odds where the fight will stop the odds of me winning to my advantage. That's where John and Faraz are master at this, and Freddie Roach is master at this in boxing. That's why I feel very very lucky to have these guys with me in my corner, because they're competent in these three layers: physical, technical, and tactical, which most trainer can have only one, two, or they don't have three. It's very rare to find the trainer who can do these three things.
So when you get to the tactical layer, is this something that you all agree on? Do you discuss it? When you're approaching a fight, like say Michael Bisping,
yeah,
like what? How do you do it? You say this is what I see in his fights, and then Firas gives his input, and John gives his input, and then Freddie gives his input,
yeah,
and you start discussing what's the best way to handle it.
So coming into that fight with Michael Bisping. Michael Bisping was very well prepared. He has a very good team with Jason Perrello. So we were expecting. You always have to gauge, also to know you and to know your opponent. You know, sometimes knowing your opponent is easier than to knowing yourself. You know, so you have to be realistic about your strength and weaknesses and how you're gonna match up against your opponent. With Michael Bisping. What messed me up a little bit is, and all of us, is we were expecting Michael Bisping to come straight at me, try to take me out right away. Instead of that, it was moving, especially more in the second round. So the first round I was doing well, but in the second round, he started moving away and be more, instead of coming at me, it was more trying to running away from me. And that's why a lot of people, they said to me, man, because I lost the second round against Michael Bisping. And people was like, man, what happened to you? It seems like you slowed down a little bit. It's only that I slowed down. It's also I got hit with a very strong right hand, right on the bottom by a guy who maybe outweighed me 20 pounds, you know? So it slows a man down. It's not that my cardio was bad. My cardio was fine, but we get punched on the bottom, it slowed a man down. And he cut me off guard. He changed his strategy from round one to round two. He became more like, he was more like a runner instead of a hunter, mm-hmm, kind of guy.
And so he caught you with a counter shot?
What he did is very smart. He couldn't get to me. If you look at the replay of the fight with Michael Bisping, he couldn't get to me straight to my head. He was trying to hit me with his jab, with his strike, tried to target my head, but I was too fast for him. So I don't know if it's his trainer or him who decided to change. So he decided to be like a runner. So I decided to try to chase him a little bit more. And what happened to me, he jabbed my lead hand, which squared me. Mm-hmm. And then he connected me straight on the chin. In the same time, I was trying to throw a leg kick. So it was a perfect timing, beautiful execution. And I don't know if he practiced that, but it was very well done, very smart. So if I tried to target my head, he jabbed my hand and hit me with the rear hand. And that's why it hurt me. It hurt me. I tried to put a poker face on during that fight, but it hurt me. It's one of the strikes that hurt me the most. Even though Michael Bisping is not known as a knockout guy, this shot really hurt me because the precision was, the timing was good.
Yeah, I've never understood why people don't think he hits hard. I mean, look what he did to Rockhold. I mean,
nah.
He hits fucking hard.
I think it's what hurts someone in a fight. I mean, what can put away someone is not necessarily the power, but it's more precision and timing. And that particular right hand was perfectly timed and with great precision. So that's why I got hurt, and he won the second round. Then I had to make adjustment for the third round. And that's when Freddie, John, and Firas come into play. They saw what he was doing, and they say after the right hand just slip and come with the hook over the top and the right hand, and that's what I did. And then he knocked him down. But in a fight, whatever your trainer tells you, if you didn't practice it, it's not going to work. I mean, you don't have time to think. It's autopilot.
Yeah.
So I was on autopilot. Sometimes you just need some kind of guidance that put you back, that put your autopilot in the right direction. And that's what happened into that fight.
A reminder.
Yes, a little reminder. Hey, we're not going this way, we're going this way. Okay, then it's still the autopilot, but it's different direction.
The crazy thing about Mike is that he has very poor vision in his right eye. A lot of people might not know about it, but in the Vitor Belfort fight, he damaged his retina very badly. He's had several surgeries, and he's got oil in his eye that's sort of like protecting it, and he'll have it fixed once he's done fighting. But, you know, if you look at him, one of his eyes is darker than the other eye.
It's true.
And that's that right eye. And did you particularly target things going to that right side, like things off of your left side?
Yeah, it's a lot of things that we drilled on with the left hook. That's why, like, when I hit him with the left hook, that was a lot of...
Because he felt he would have a harder time seeing things coming out. His vision was more blurry.
He does, but the thing is with Michael is he adjusts himself very well to this, you know? Like it's like he knows it, and probably knows it himself, but the way he fights, he adjusts it very well. You know, he put himself in a position that he cannot get hit often with this, you know, especially in my fight. So I needed almost to wait for him to commit with the right hand to come over the top. Yeah. And if you look at the fight with Kevin Gastelum, it's the same thing. He missed with the right hand, and then he got countered. It's always when he missed with the right hand that he got countered.
The Kelvin fight, I think, was a mistake.
A mistake because he was not prepared for this. He didn't...
Right. Well, it's also he just got off of a crazy fight with you.
It was bad. I think it was a bad mistake from his part. But look, to his credit, he tried to do something and that I do try to do all the time. He tried to do something unique and very special. And if he would have won, we would not have this discussion. We would be saying, like, man, what a comeback. It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
he lose a title, come back straight to fight Kelvin Gastelum. That's amazing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He took a risk, man, and I can't blame him for that. I took a risk myself, too. It's just sometimes you roll the dice, you know, and you expect things to go your way, and it didn't go his way.
Yeah.
I felt bad, but it is what it is.
Well, even he said that when he came out to that fight, the Kelvin Gastelum fight, he just didn't feel like he just didn't feel there.
Of course he didn't feel there because he didn't have the time to prepare for this.
Right.
Like I said... But you're not going to go into a fight and improvise everything. You're going to do the same thing you've been doing in training. What you've been doing in training, you didn't have enough time to prepare for that particular type of body, that particular type of like I said, physical, technical, and tactical, which is the most important one. You didn't have the tactical preparation. Physical was not probably 100% as well. And the technical is there because it's his brain, but... You know, it's like he didn't program his autopilot to react to a certain situation that Kelvin will give him. He's a lefty, shorter, stockier, you know, different style than me, completely different. It's like he couldn't have a most different style than me, than this guy.
But he won the title that way. He won the title on 11 days' notice.
I agree.
It's like it worked for him in the past.
It worked for him in the past, but he didn't get... knocked down or choked out before he fight Rockhold. That messed up your recuperation too, you know what I mean? He was fresh probably. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe he wasn't. I don't know personally what he was doing.
But you know, how many weeks later was it?
He was not, like, not maybe not even a month or something. Like,
yeah, something
He would not have been clear to fight if he would have been in America. I don't think he would have been clear to fight. I think he would not have been clear to fight. I think he was suspended, I think.
I don't think so.
Because it was in China. Is the different? Maybe the
3 weeks. Wow.
Three weeks. Yeah, man.
That seems pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you hurt him with that left hook, and then you choked him unconscious.
If it would be me, like maybe I'm not as courageous as Michael Bisping. I would not take the fight. Even me, if I win the fight with Michael Bisping, I would not take the fight.
Is that the word though? Courageous? You're a pretty courageous guy. Is it courageous or is it tactical?
Yeah, tactical. Like, I would not have taken that risk.
Yeah.
That risk. But it's I'm not in his shoes. I don't know.
Right.
His environment. Maybe he would have.
Toughness is paid off for him though. I mean, he's one of the toughest fucking guys in the sport. He always has been, and that toughness is the reason why he's like, fuck it, I'll fight again. You know, let's do it. Just a fucking animal.
He's a great example of hard work and perseverance and you know, like when you say like everything is possible, it is.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable fighter, this guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's courageous and what I like about him too, he stands for the same thing that I stand for against performance enhancing drug, and I think it's very important for me. And for me, it was like an honor to fighting him. It was like a lot of guys he lost to it. This guy that that would have been cut on performance enhancing drugs, and he's very open. He talks about it all the time, and it's I think it's a great model for the sport.
Yeah, I know. I agree, and a great model for just an example of how you can achieve great things if you work hard.
Yeah,
and that's what he's done.
He's one of the guys that, like, I hate him when I was in training camp, but I loved him as well at the same time. I remember at one point we're in a conference in Toronto, and that is an hilarious story. After the conference, we go by the back, kind of the back door of a mall, and there's like, I don't know if it was stage or not. I mean, I'm not aware. If it was stage, I was not aware of it. So there's a camera, like, I think it was TMZ or something. It was a camera that followed us. So there is kids following us. They're about to ask me to take pictures. And then I see a camera coming towards me. And then I see Michael. That's after the conference. And Michael says to me, say, "Don't you F put your hand on me again, because then then I look in his face and like, it's like, what? As I like, you don't put my, and then it create kind of a buzz for the fight, and we start to shout at each other and kind of almost push each other, and then Jason Perullo come, "Boys, leave it for the fight, boys." But it's not staged. It's true. And I'm like, right, man, what the hell is he doing there? But then after I realized it was on TMZ. There were a camera there. Then the kids who came to ask me for an autograph, They kind of get intimidating. They were like, they went back. Then I turned around and say, "It's okay, it's finished. Now you can come." And they go, they went back to their apartment. I'm like, oh God, it is what it is, you know? But that was probably the best promotion of the whole fight, like that particular incident, you know what I mean? So I hate him and I love him the same way. Michael is kind of a guy that he's a pro at boosting the anticipation for a fight.
Hype.
You want to hate him, but you kind of love him in the same way for the human being that he is, you know?
No, he's great at talking shit, for sure. Yeah. That is a big thing these days. I mean, especially after Conor.
Yeah.
You know, Conor McGregor has kind of changed the sport in a lot of ways, and that shit talking is a huge factor now.
It is, but sometimes you don't know when it's real, when it's not, because I'm not. It's not part of my personality. And same thing at the ESPN in Boston. Same thing. We do an interview. We go back and forth. Blah 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 blah. Kind of almost insulting each other, sort of speak. Then the UFC does everything to separate us from one of each other. Like, I'm like, I don't know if it's real or not. I don't even know if he's trying to push me. I'm going to push him back because I feel threatening.
So you don't know if it's hype or if he's really ready to fight.
Because I'm not an instigator. Right. I don't like confrontation, but it is what it is. So I go to the bathroom in between. Who comes next to the bathroom with us? It's Michael Bisping. Then is the camera that follows us in the bathroom. We're taking a piss next to each other. We're like this. Then I turn around and see Michael Bisping. I'm like, holy shit. Then he tell the camera to F out. It's like, get out. Then the camera goes out. Then he look at me. Then he start laughing. Then I start laughing. then I told him, I say, "Hey, you got a Range Rover?" He's like, "Yeah. But now he's in the garage." I'm like, "Yeah, so you need to get rid of it because after a while it starts breaking down." He's like, "Yeah, I know." It's like, "Okay, game face, see you later." How do you want to hate a guy like this? You know what I mean?
Oh, that's hilarious.
But I hate him because when we insult each other, we say real insult and real things that we think about each other. But in a way, we have the respect.
Yeah.
So it's real. But so that relationship that I have with Bisping was very unique. I didn't have the same relationship with Diaz, for example. Diaz, I didn't know if I meet him even in the street today, maybe he hates my guts. Like, I don't know what he's gonna.
Right.
I don't know if he wanted to fight me or like.
He might really want to fight you. Like, he's not a hype guy.
No, I think he's. I think he takes it personal. Yes. I think it's a freaking sport, man. It's more to life than what it is. Yeah. People say, "Oh, fighting is my." No, man, fighting is not my life, man. My life is my family, man. Is my friend, the people I love. This is what I do in my life. Is not my life. Fighting is over. It's over. I turn around and do something else. You know what I mean? Like, is what I do in my life. It's not my life. You know what I mean? It's not the end of the world, man. It's more to life than fighting.
It's funny hearing that from you, Because you would expect to hear that from someone who isn't considered one of the greatest of all time. But you're considered one of the greatest of all time. So it would be very hard to argue your approach because it's been so successful.
People think you have to be
super obsessed.
I'm super obsessed, Joe, but that's why I become crazy. Then I stopped for 4 years. Then when I came back, I some of my circuit in the brain... Then I start to analyze myself. I'm like, why I become crazy? Why did I stop? Because I'm taking this stuff too seriously, man. You have to take it for what it is, you know. Like,
yeah.
It's a world championship fight. I was fighting Michael Bisping. After 4 years, people, oh my god, the fight are promoted on drama.
Yeah.
And like John said, John Danner, he says, "Is like fight are not won on drama. Are won are on mundane." Things than we do every day.
Yeah.
That's how fight are won.
Yes.
How you program your cruise your cruise driver, you know, to your autopilot to win the fight. That's how you me, I see it a fight like an autopilot, you know, like so when I fight, when I prepare myself for a fight, especially for the tactical part, I program like a computer. How I want to react against that specific problem. How I'm gonna take care of that specific problem. The only way to program it is to do repetition. It's like you said at one point, Eddie Bravo said, like tying up your shoes.
Yes.
Because we've been doing it so many times, you can talk to someone, the same thing.
Yes.
When I get into a fight, I analyze again and I'm fighting and I see what pattern he does the most often. So I want to program my computer to react to that pattern that would give me the advantage into the fight. I don't know when that pattern would occur, but I want to program myself that when it occurs, I have an answer for it right away. I don't have to think about it. I don't think. I just react. And that's my problem when I used to fight, and I got a lot of criticism before. I was thinking too much. Towards the end of my career, I had so much pressure. I didn't perform as well as I was earlier. Mm. Especially my last fight before I stopped for the 4 years. I was thinking too much, overthinking, putting too much pressure. Like you said, it's too serious. You have to take it for what it is. It's only a fight. In 10 years, it sucks if you lose, but man, it is what it is. You know what I mean? Don't make it bigger than what it is. It's only a fight. And sometimes it's something very therapeutic that I like to do before a fight. I drive a car. When I fight in Vegas, for example, I drive a car, or New York, same thing. I drive a car. When I used to fight in Vegas before my fights, I used to be very, very stressed. And a very therapeutic things that I like to do is drive my car around and see normal people. Then I go in. I gotta explain to you why I drive and I see an old lady with her grocery store bag. And I'm thinking, like, she doesn't care if I win the fight Saturday or not. She's not even going to hear about it. Then I look, another guy yelling to another guy because whatever problem. Oh, this guy is going to the bank to pay his mortgage stuff. They don't care, you know. The effect that I have on the universe is so freaking small. Nobody cares. I'm the only one putting the pressure on me. Nobody gives a damn about it. So that's why they helped me to perform now. That's how some younger guy, they say, I'm nervous. How do you? I heard you don't sleep well the night before. I said, yeah, it's true. I don't sleep well. He said, what is your trick? How do you find a way to sleep well? I was like, I don't really sleep well either nowadays. He said, how do you feel better about it? Like, I just know that I'm not going to sleep well and it's not going to affect the outcome of the competition. It's just a normal thing. You learn how to deal with it better. You're not going to change it.
Yeah.
You just accept it.
Yeah.
The stress is your friend, man. That's going to make you react. That's going to be on the edge.
Have you ever slept well before a fight?
Never.
Never.
Only one time.
Which fight?
When I fought Matt Serra. And I got knocked out. And then after that knocked out, I got so scared that it happened again. It's the most humiliating day of my career. I was so angry. Like I said, I was like putting too much on myself. It starts there. It's like I didn't even want to go to buy eggs at the grocery store, right? Because people, they look, oh, you got knocked outside. I thought everybody cares about me. Nobody cares about you. Nobody cares. It's only a small percentage of population. Nobody gives a damn. And even if they do, what? You make a mistake. You zig when you should have zagged. You get clipped. So what? Everybody make mistake. You have to take fight like it is. You know, it's a sporting event. That's why I don't take it personally. Like when I have the problem with the Diaz, bro, no problem, man. It's a fight. It's not personal for me. You're in my life now. You won't be there in 10 years, maybe. Maybe you will. Who knows? It's only like a chunk of life that we share together. And then after he's gone, no problem with that.
That's definitely a better attitude to look at it, man, that way.
That's what it is. That's how an athlete, they should think, you know? And that's that knowledge that I have is with years of competition, you know, all the problem I have, the colitis and all that, that's because of that BS that I got it, like putting too much on me.
You think that's
normal? If
I
fight again, it will go back the same pattern. I will be very stressed, and it's normal to be stressed, but I will accept it. I accept it better now than I used to do when I was younger.
Now, after you won the title, there was thoughts of whether or not you would defend it, if you were going to fight Robert Whittaker, like what you were going to do. What caused your decision? What made you decide to relinquish the belt?
So the reason why I relinquished the belt is I went to do some physical tests to see what is the problem with my health condition, because during the camp, I knew I had problem, but I didn't know what it was. I knew it was, you know, the test, the blood test and everything for the cancer, it came negative. So after I went to do, like I said, a colonoscopy, it came back that I have an ulcer inside my stomach. Then as a doctor, I say, how long it takes to get rid of this? I say, it's all your life. But the symptom can go up, down, depending every people, whatever they do differently. Then I start researching who's the best doctor, how can I do this? And that's when I start reading about the fasting and stuff. And then I tried it, but I saw that a lot of, you know, in the sport of MMA, a lot of the guys are starving. They're not rich, you know. I'm lucky now. I have enough money for the rest of my life. I don't need to fight anymore, you know, if I don't do nothing crazy like buying a private airplane. And I'm not that kind of person, or falling into drugs and stuff. Like, I think I'm good, you know. For me, my family and everything, I think I'm good. However, when I'm looking at the landscape, I see a lot of guys, like, for example, Conor McGregor, he hold on to the title to for the attention, the sponsors, the this and that. And a lot of people do that. They kind of stole the division. And I said to myself, you know, I stand for the fighters. I always did, you know, publicly. I said, why am I going to keep the title until to see if I feel better or not and defend it? Because I don't even know if my weight was dropping down. It's like I'm not even a 185. I'm more a 170 or 155ers. I don't have the size of a 185ers. So I'm like, I relinquish it right away. You know, I don't want to stall the division and make people wait because of me. You know, the world don't go around me. You know what I mean? So for the respect, I did it.
That's
but
beautiful.
I didn't know before the fight I was going to do this. It happened like this. People was like, oh, yeah, you know. No, I didn't know it was going. I didn't know I was going to have a colitis and all that stuff. It came up. I never tried it before. I didn't know what would be the outcome, how I would feel. I never did it. You know, it was a test at the same time, but I didn't know. You know, I have a lot of... I'm not a perfect man, Joe. I have a lot of negative stuff about me. But one thing that I'm not is I'm not a coward. This I swear. If I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do. I'm not a coward, you know. And every of my fight, I'm scared. I'm terrified. But whatever I feel, I step and I respect my contract and I do it, you know. And I didn't know the colitis and all that. It would be illogical right now if I want to go back when I'm ready to go back 185. I'm not 185, you know.
Right.
It would be a stupid move.
And so, if you're gonna fight again, it'll be 170 or 155.
Yes.
Where are you leaning? Are you leaning towards 55 or 70?
I don't know. I want to lean where if I want, you know what. I've climbed the Everest many times. You know, I've climbed it once, I lose to Matthews, then I climb it twice, I lose, then I got it, then I lose to Massaro, then I climb it again. I've done it like three times, and you know, like I'm 37 years old. I just turned 37 few days ago. I don't have much left.
Right.
And for what I have left, I want to make the big fight, the fight that the fan want to see, they want to enjoy. I also want personally for me to achieve something that is unique, that is rare, that maybe that never been attempted before. You know, that would be something that excites me. And I'm not only driven by money, you know, it's good to have money. We like money. It drives us all, including myself. But it's not the unique thing that drives me. It need to be more than money. And it need to be some kind of achievement thing that comes with it that would exciting me.
So what would that be? That would be a 155-pound title.
They offer me Nate Diaz now.
Yeah.
It was a rumor. They said it was a done deal. It's not a done deal. Not on my part. And I don't think it was on Nate Diaz's part as well, because from what I've heard, his brother Nick said, and even Nate says that's his big brother's fight. It's not his fight. From Nate Diaz is an incredible fighter, very well rounded. However, if you put yourself in my shoes, there is nothing good that can come out of it except money, and money is not the only thing that drive me. If I beat Nate Diaz decisively, some people will say, most people will say, he took an easy fight or whatever. Like the criticism will say, he's a bully.
You know, fought 155.
Yeah, he fought a smaller guy that competed a smaller. Maybe he's not even smaller than me. Maybe we're about a lot of 155er guys are bigger than me right now.
Nate's a big guy.
He's a big guy. He's about the same size as me, but because I compete at 170 for most of my career.
And you won the title at 185.
Yes, it will make me look bad. It will make me look like a bully. And this is if I win decisively. If I win, not decisively, if I win like it's a war back and forth, people will say, you suck. You cannot even, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if I get beat, oh my God, forget it. It's for my legacy. It's the end of the world. It's all the work I put in is finished. And I could have a bad day.
Yeah.
Something that I discovered too during my career is being the strongest man in the world. That was my dream when I was young. That's why I did UFC. I wanted to be the stronger man in the world. And I realized over the year, it did not exist. You cannot be the stronger man in the world. This is an illusion. I love the younger guy. They say, I'm the baddest man. No, you're not, man. It doesn't exist. You would be strong. You would be a better fighter than this guy in that particular day, at that particular location, at that particular moment. Maybe in an hour, if the fight would occur an hour later, an hour before, or maybe in a different place where the altitude is higher or lower, or different scenario, different environment, you will lose that fight. It's always a question of odds. You know what I mean? Mm. So being the stronger man in the world, its style makes fight. Maybe we're three guys. I beat you, you beat him, he beat me. Who's the best guy? There's no best guy.
Right, that's MMA math, right?
It is like this. That's the way to see it. So there is no stronger man in the world. You can't. You say, I'm the baddest man on the planet because I'm champion. Like, the belt thing is an illusion, the belt thing. The belt thing is a symbol, but it's an illusion. It doesn't exist. You're not the stronger man in the world. Mm. I know a lot of people will disagree with me, but it is what it is. That's, if you ask most experienced fighter, most people will think the same way. Because we realize at one point, like when we're young, because of our confidence or maybe the cockiness or confidence, after it, not that it fades, but we see, we have more experience, knowledge. We realize it's all BS. It's not true.
So the UFC offered you Nate Diaz. Did you consider it at all? Or was it like
I consider it. I consider it. However, I analyze it. I talk with Ferraz, with my trainer, and everybody. We were all on the same page on that. It's like it's not worth it.
But did the UFC announce it? Did they say that they were working on it?
I think they announced it. I'm not sure. I think they said it was a done deal. Look, it's not the first time it happened, and I'm not. They have a business to run, the UFC, and their biggest fear is someone take the title and run with it. And it's been I've been doing it two times with Johnny Hendricks and with Michael Bisping.
Right.
Like I run. They say I run, but it's for reasons. Yeah. You know, there's always a reasons. And that's their biggest fear.
Sure.
So that and I understand that they have a business to run. It's like WWE when Andre the Giant passed the torch to Hulk Hogan. He passed the torch because it's for the business, yes. And he agreed to pass the torch.
Yes.
But the thing in this sport, we're not in WWE.
Yeah.
It's my life on the line here.
Yes.
I don't care about the business. I do what is the best for my interest to me.
Sure, you have to.
I have to. I have to be selfish. And I am selfish. I say it openly. I say it to the fan, to every. I am selfish because it's a sport that I can die, man. You can die in this sport. And this is the truth. You can get or not, maybe not die, but it could create your death in the next time to come. In the next year, maybe you get a blow that messed up something in your brain because of a trauma that created something else. So it's a very serious sport, man. It's not like you play hockey, play baseball, play football. You don't play fighting. So you do it for yourself. You do what is best for yourself. The organization will do what is best for the organization. Yes. They're not your friend.
Right.
So that's why the relation I have with Dana and some of the guy in UFC, it's a very special relationship. Maybe one day we'll sit down and we'll talk about the good old days and have a blast, have a laugh. But right now, I'm always on the defensive. While when my phone rings, I see Dana White, like, God damn. I'm like, then I say what I should say, what I should not say. No. And I'm completely honest about it. It's like some fighters say, no, man, I just... It's like, if you do that, it's because you're an idiot if you do that.
If you just take any fight they give
I'll fight. No, man, it doesn't work like that. The ascension to be champion is not a straight line. Is this, is an obstacle there? Then you come back. It is what it is. It is what it is. And you need to be surrounded by smart people. And if you don't have smart people, you need to be smart enough to find those people that are competent, that will help you in particular domain that you're not competent. And to make the job for you and complete your circle, you know?
Yeah. Dana was saying for a while that you didn't want to fight. He was saying George doesn't want to fight.
He said before I didn't want to fight before I fought Bisping. You know, he said that last
time. Why do you think he was saying that? Do you think he was putting pressure on you psychologically, like fucking with your head?
Yeah. My ego will make me, okay, I'll show you that I can fight. Bring me this guy.
Right.
Yeah, that's what it is, man. It's a freaking game. It's all a game. We say it's not a game. It's real now. It's all a game. It's all business. It's all a game. I like Dana. Dana, man, the sport was nowhere.
Yeah.
The sport was gone, man. It didn't go nowhere. Because of Dana, we owe Dana my living, I owe it to Dana White.
When I do the UFC weigh-ins, when I introduce everybody, I point to him, I say, Dana White, without him, none of this would be possible.
And you're right, 100%.
100%.
He's the best pound-for-pound promoter of all time. I don't care about Don King, whoever you... Dana White is the best.
He's better than all
of them. Sport included. I never seen anything like this. He can sell ice to an Eskimo if he wants to. He's incredibly good.
And he's fun.
And he's good at messing up with my head too. Because even though I sometimes my ego is like Nate Diaz, because the stuff he said too and the way they try. I don't know if the UFC tried to make him say stuff, because some fighters are more like pawned on a chess chessboard than others. Me, I'm not. I don't follow. When everything I analyze, I'm thinking. I was like, why you say that? Why? Okay, that's because. So a lot of stuff have been said in my ego. So I'm like, man, what a nice. And I want to say, all right, you think my schedule is too busy? I'll take the fight and I'll kick your ass. You know what I mean? But I should not do that. It's a stupid move.
Right.
If I start acting like this, I'm broom.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys, they don't have that self-control and self-discipline in them. Mm. It's all a game, man. It's all a game. People say it's not. It's BS. It's all a game, man. It's all a game.
What did Nate say that fucked with you?
Okay. Nate Diaz and Nick is like kind of together in a way. They say that I took steroid when I fought his brother. I messed up my glove, my wrap. I didn't make weight. And what did he say? Oh, yeah, I put something in the IV of his brother. So he said, if I want to take care of that, like, if I don't know, he said it in his own like word, like in English slang, like, oh, yeah. If you want to take care of this, I'm there, you know.
Kind he of. Said someone poisoned him recently. Yes. Who was that? For which fight was that? Is that Anderson Silva?
No. Okay, I gotta confess, Joe. I gotta confess.
Okay.
I was so scared during this fight, so we tried to poison. I was so scared of fighting Nick Diaz, so we poisoned his IV. But he survived. So I was even more terrified, you know? So all the athletic commission was on my payroll, so they tricked away and then I made it. And it went through. So I was even more terrified. So the alien abducted me and put gamma ray to increase my strength like the Hulk, like a performance enhancing drug. And the fight was still happening. So right before, I put some glass and cement in my gloves to make sure. And still had a crazy hard fight, you know, so I got to confess with Nick Mao, but it's completely insane, you know.
Did he what say did that he, was for he, your fight? Was
that- he said all that. He said for my fight that I poisoned his IV, that I was on steroid, that my rap was wrong. And he said also, what he said that? He said, yeah, the weigh in, like I didn't make weight, like I tricked the athletic commission or they were on my, like, it's all like, it's just funny. I think he has a problem of conspiration. He think everybody is against him, you know?
Paranoia.
Yes, yeah. I think that's what it is.
That might be the weed.
It could be.
Weed.
This, you know, I don't want to say nothing bad about weed. I think but
weed,
but,
like all things, can be good but also can be bad.
Okay.
Food is good for you.
I know you're for the weed stuff.
I do enjoy weed.
And you're a smart guy. You have much better argument for that
responsible
kind of
use though of everything, including drinking, right? Yeah, I like a drink every now and then. Yeah. But I like pot, but I don't think you should smoke it all day.
Yeah, but I think that's what it is. I think weed, I don't know if it's the weed, but I think it's maybe weed with social environment or and genetic can create some kind of disorder in the brain and make you have the conspiracy problem.
Yes.
You think everybody is against you. Mm-hmm. Could happen. And
it could happen.
I've seen a lot of my friends who smoke a lot. They have this problem.
Yeah.
Sometimes they think they paranoid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's like all things. You do too much of it, it can fuck with your head.
Everything could be good or bad depending on how you use. Yes.
So what fight is interesting to you? There's this talk of Khabib at 155 is the champion now.
Yes.
And Conor. Those are the two fights that I hear.
Right now as we speak now. I wouldn't want right now to put myself immediately in a training camp because the reason is my symptom is not gone.
Your colitis.
I feel a little bit. It's not it's not as bad as it was. Not even close. It's much better, but I want to get the rear of it before I get into a training camp.
Yeah.
Before I put myself into a stress. Because that stress, what it does, it amplify everything. So if you have like little issues, that it will amplify it.
Yeah.
And at least I need to take care of that. My health is in pass in front of my performance in sport. This is very important. And when I'm ready, like, I don't know, I would like to do something, like I said, unique, rare, something that is rare that never been done before.
That would be a 55-pound championship.
It could be 55, which is the first in MMA to have the three titles, never been done before. Or it could be maybe by that time it would be another guy. Maybe, I don't know. It would be someone will come back and do something great. He will be the man to beat. You know what I mean?
Right.
We talk about the Diaz brother, and also I changed subject a little bit, but with on the same way. It's sad for Nick Diaz that he doesn't fight.
Yeah.
Because stylistically, people might think I'm crazy, but stylistically, I think he can beat Tyron Woodley. I think he can. He's the kind of guy that keep coming at you, and he's good at taking shots, surviving, that keep coming at you. And I remember when I fought him, it's terrifying because you got tired, and this guy keep coming at you, and he make you feel like you're claustrophobic, and you do things at him, and he keep coming, and he's very dangerous in the later round, like after like three, four rounds. I'm like, man, it's like, It's very.
He never gets tired.
It doesn't get tired, but it make you. It's exhausting. Yeah. Also, nervous on the nervous system and the mental system. Not only physically. It's not much physically. It's on the nervous system. He come at you and you fake and there is like a reaction time and reset time when you fight. You know, like. And I've studied this with my team when I was fighting guys and Nate Diaz, he make people tired. He make the
Nick.
That's why he wins fight. He's kind of a slow guy, but people got more tired than him quickly, especially in their nervous system.
Yeah,
there is a guy like BJ Penn, for example. When I fought BJ Penn, I knew that BJ Penn had the best reaction time of all fighter we have seen in UFC when he was at his best. I measure the guy we know work with me in Ferraz, measure it with the frame. You know, a frame like a picture when you throw a punch, click, 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 click. BJ Penn had the best reaction time of all fighters. BJ Penn when he was in his best. So when I fought him, I knew if I go straight at him, he have a better reaction time than me. So my goal is, he had a very good reaction time, but a bad reset time. So his reset time is kind of the endurance for the brain. Mm. So he could react like a sprint. He could react very fast, but after a while, he got tired very fast. After a lot of faking it and then this, I make him guess and stuff. So he was getting very tired fast. So because of that, I could get him. Because of that, I could fake him and make him tired and lower his reaction time and then get him later.
Yeah.
So Nate Diaz, that's why he's so good. Nick Diaz, sorry, that's why he's so good. And that's sad for him. He doesn't fight. His best years are now. He should do now. That's what he should do, man.
And he's only 33. Is that what we said? 33 or 34? I mean, he's in his.
Yeah, he should do it now. He should do it. Man, he had an opportunity to make a lot of money. He could do it. He could do it.
They suspended him for pot after he fought Anderson Silva, and then he had to pay a fine. He never paid the fine.
Yeah, because he's Nick Diaz.
Yeah.
But I respect that because in his mind, he think he's wrong and he don't.
Yeah.
He has a line. He have a code, you know?
Yeah.
And the same thing, I have the code for me for the drug test policy. I didn't want to come back unless they do something. I say it to Lorenzo and Dana after my fight. My last fight, I say it. Is it my code? And they wouldn't have done it. I would not have come back.
You think Hendricks was on something?
This is a question. I don't have the evidence. I would never have. Like, you don't have the evidence. Like, we talk about fighters like that got cut. You don't have the evidence they were there before they got cut. Like, right. I don't have the evidence. The only thing I can say is, I didn't want to attack one particular individual, and I wanted to change the system. Because if you attack one individual, another one will come.
Right.
So in that particular case, it was Hendricks. And I wanted to change it. And in the beginning, he agreed with me to do it. But then he changed his mind. And that's when I got very angry.
So he agreed with you to take random drug tests.
He agreed. It was public. He agreed. When we say it, you can look. You have the evidence that in the interview, he said he agreed to do a test. But then he said, no, I did not agree. Because also the UFC told him to not agree. The UFC told him.
Really?
The UFC told him. This is the truth. They told him to not do it. Because they didn't want. He had a problem maybe with the VADA, VADA,
World Anti-Doping Agency.
Yes, there is WADA that make the guideline, but they're VADA. That's VADA that I took. They had a problem with them. I don't know why.
Was Victor Conte? Did he have something to do
with
that?
No, it was Margaret. Is it Margaret something? Or it was a lady, but they had a problem, so they said to not do with the test. Not do it. Period. I don't know if it was because... I think it was because of VADA. Mm-hmm. Because I made a little investigation on that, and I got very angry. That's why, like, psychologically, I said to myself, I should not have... If I would have go back in time, I would not have taken that fight. I would not have taken that fight. That's why I respect a lot of fighters. They stand up for themselves. I didn't have the courage. I didn't do it when it was time to do it. And I should. I regret it. This is one thing I regret in my career. I should have done it. I said, you don't want to sign? Okay, take your belt. I'm gone.
Yeah.
I should have done that before. Maybe I would have come back earlier.
So
I would miss a paycheck, but I would have enough. You know what I mean?
So you don't want to say whether or not you suspect that Johnny Hendricks is doing something, but there was people that were definitely doing something.
Yes. I don't have the evidence. Maybe right. he did. Maybe
it's
he
a good
did.
Way to it, look at it.
I don't want to accuse. And a lot of guys, they do it. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to judge them because a lot of them, they have a family to feed and everything. And this could make the difference between winning $1 million or not winning, like, at all. You know yeah. what I mean? So everybody has a different reason why they do it. And it's just a system encourage it
yes.
to do it. Yeah. That's a problem.
Yeah. And especially if there's no testing or if the testing is very poor.
Yes.
Like the testing when you first started your career, I mean, basically you just had to pee after the weigh-in and you were okay.
You have to be... Even now, it's still easy to even now, it's...
You think
it's,
so?
Yeah, man, it is.
Like, how would someone rig the system?
Okay, now, out? Okay, let's say I have a whereabout on my phone, okay?
Yes.
Now I'm saying it, and everybody knows that, especially the cheater, they know that. Look, I thought it true. It's not 100% sure, but let's say I want to have an injection of a product that will last in my body for 2 days or 1 day. Mm-hmm. So I know that particular day I cannot be tested because if I am... I'm screwed.
Right.
So I put in my whereabout that I'm traveling to the freaking
Antarctica.
Antarctica or anywhere, like somewhere that is
crazy
believable.
Yeah.
And then I come back in two days after. But that substance will stay in my body for a certain period of time, but the effect of it will last maybe a month.
Yeah.
And now we talk about performance enhancing drugs, Joe. People, they misunderstand. They say, oh, yeah, but it still doesn't make the difference. Yes, it does make the difference in an athlete. And the reason is, in the 80s and before, it was giving you more power, more stamina, more endurance. Now, man, with the technology, they have stuff that will change your reaction time, your confidence, your reset time. And this is a huge, huge application, man. If you play baseball or you're in fighting, you see the things coming. You have your reaction time. You're sharper in the brain. What makes a guy athletic? It's not his muscle. The reason why Usain Bolt is he runs faster. There's many reasons why, but one of the main reasons is because his brain, his nervous system, is better. And if you make your nervous system better and more competent, better. You're a better athlete, man. You're a better fighter. You're a better baseball player. You're better. You're better better person in yeah. a way. Of course, that effect is limited, but there's still the muscle memory thing that will last. You know, and it could last right. forever. So now with the technology, man, at one point the sport. That's why I'm afraid. I'm afraid the sport becomes so messed up that with the gene doping and all that, at one point it would be all. Sport will be completely messed up. In the future, I talk, not now, but sport will be, it won't be any normal people competing. It will right. be all like kind of a cyborg people.
Yeah, cyborgs. Everybody, people are really worried about gene doping. And they
yeah,
think
man.
That they're already starting to do that in
but
China.
Not only gene, even the modern stuff, performance enhancing drug they do, man, it's very hard to catch up people. So like I said, it's easy to take something. I mean, there is always a chance that you get caught, but... That's how if I would do it, that's how I would do.
Yeah.
And I would pretend I'm going in Antarctica, get an injection, then I come back and I'm good.
Novitski told me that they're starting, well, they have it and they don't know whether or not people are taking it, but they're taking testosterone as derived from animals, not from wild yams. Like the way they get testosterone now, if you get like a testosterone injection, they're getting it from wild yams. And somehow
yams.
Or another, yams, yeah, the fruit, the you know, the vegetable,
really?
Yam, the tuber, you know, it's like,
really?
It's
like yeah,
root.
It's in Jamaica is the yam, yeah.
Yeah, that's how they're getting testosterone. They're getting it from that. Yeah.
A plant? Really?
Yeah, yeah they're plant-based wild yam testosterone. But now they're able to get it from animals. And the animal testosterone, you don't, like, they do carbon isotope tests.
Yes.
And the carbon isotope tests don't detect the difference between a animal testosterone and human testosterone. But these are current tests. One of the things that they do is they freeze your piss and they freeze your blood for, I think they're doing it for years. And this is how they've caught some of these Russian wrestlers. And they've taken away gold medals from guys that won in the early 2000s for they've found new tests. And with the new tests, they've been able to determine that they were taking steroids.
I think it's the same thing when Ben Johnson beat Carl Lewis.
Yes. Yeah.
And Ben Johnson is.
Well, he was on some shit, but guess what? Carl Lewis was on some shit too.
I think 9 out of the 10 or 8 out of the, like the guy that finished like 8, like he was a Brazilian guy. He got interviewed. He said, "Yeah, I was just a line fillers for the main guy." He would have won the gold medal.
Right, because everybody else tested.
Man, that shit changed your life, man. That changed your life, man. You make you a better living, millionaire maybe, sponsorship.
Yeah.
That's just so bad, you know?
It's crazy.
Yeah, man, it's crazy.
Well, how about Lance Armstrong? Yeah. I mean, when you go the Tour de France, when he won, and then they took his title away, all the people that were below him were also guilty.
Yeah.
So you take his title away. Well, what about the number two? He's fucking guilty too. Number three. They said that on one of the years that he won, you had to go back to 18th place to find a guy who's never caught taking anything. That's a dirty sport.
But, man, you asked me if I think he was taking – I don't know.
But you have your suspicions.
I have a suspition, but it's not right if you don't have the evidence to accuse someone.
Yes, I agree with
you. And even today, it's if I think there is some guys, if there is a lot of guys that take steroid and performance enhancing drug, yes.
Yes.
And I have an idea of who. And I'm pretty, like, just for my gut feeling, 99.9% sure.
Mm.
But I don't have the evidence. It's not what you think.
Right.
It's not what you know, is what you can prove. And yes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Talking, you know, I'm in a game. I'm talking to a lot of people in between fighters. We know who does who. There's only a few handful of people who does the whole team.
Yeah.
You know, one guy could do this team, and another guy can do two team. The word goes around, man. Especially when you're top elite fighter, the word goes around, you know, like the people, they talk to me and they say if I would be interested. I've been offered before in different things, you know.
What have you been offered before?
I've been offered, man, to sometimes go train and like some deals, you know, like to go train and do something, being part of you know, like they have they take sample of your blood, they know what is missing, then they put the stuff that is missing, make you. I said no, I stay in Montreal, you know, like I don't say in Montreal could be a lot of cheater too,
right.
Like I that's the thing, you accuse a gym of cheating, you cannot accuse a gym of cheating because everybody is different, you know,
right.
There's people cheating everywhere now. You can't say, oh, these people are cheating. No, man, it doesn't work like that. It works every individual, you know. If you made the choice, if you decide to go that path, you have to be ready to face a consequence. If you don't face a consequence during your competition years, maybe you'll face later after you're gone, you retire for your career. A lot of people I know, including some of my friends, they were bodybuilders. Now you should see their body are messed up, man.
Yeah.
Their hormones are all messed up. They got bad problem. I don't want to be like that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
want to be like that. I want to be happy, you know? I want to be healthy.
Yeah, they tear their joints apart, too. That's I had Dorian Yates on the podcast. He can't even do push-ups now. I mean, and Dorian Yates was Mr. Olympia. He was a fucking giant guy, but all that, everything just ripped apart. It's like everything's all fucked up. It just doesn't work right anymore, you know?
However, if you ask these people, would you do it again? Maybe they say, yeah, maybe it was worth it. Maybe it was worth it. Maybe it wasn't.
Yeah.
I think it depends on every individual. You know what I mean? But for me, I'm happy with what I have so far, you know? I could get more maybe in the future, but I don't want to go that path to try to risk everything.
What did you think when testosterone replacement therapy was a thing and they were allowing people like Vitor and these people to take testosterone?
I was so freaking angry about this. I think it was like, you know, everybody. It's a different case for everybody, but I believe if you need to take the medication to compete, performance and medication to compete, you should not be allowed.
Shouldn't be competing.
And Joe, I'm not against steroid. I'm going to explain to you. Like, people say, oh, he's against. I'm not against, steroid or testosterone. I'm not against it. If it's for the well-being, if it's an older man who he cannot have sex with his wife and he's like, man, he goes to the doctor. He's like, man, I lose the edge a little bit. The doctor was like, yeah, I put the cream that will increase your testosterone. And the guy is happier. He have sex with his wife.
You're talking about competition.
Yes. In terms of competition, if me and you were fighting and we sign that we're not using any weapon, and I'm talking about biological weapon, and we fight man to man as real martial artists by a code of honor. And you behind or me, I go and inject myself something to make me stronger or more competent. My could also help my neuron to fire better, to get something, to be better, to enhance my performance. Now I'm against that.
Yeah.
There's a code of honor, and if you don't respect that code, man, you should be out of martial arts.
What are people taking that makes their reaction time better? Makes their mind
work
better?
I don't know the name, but there is many. If you talk to a guy, there's a lot of things. A lot of things. I know a baseball player, they take stuff for the reaction time, like the pitcher. Because in baseball, in tennis, and even in fighting, before you throw a punch, there is like an indication. The body language, you read something. Like before you throw a ball, there's a movement. Before you punch, there's a... So you see better, your brain. There's even a medication you can take for exam. You study in school. There's an exam. You have an exam tomorrow. You're going to study the stuff that you need to know. It will increase. Then you go pass the exam. I know it sounds crazy. Go get it. It's crazy, man.
Well, I know Adderall. Adderall's one that
it makes you wise, man. It makes you better in the brain. Mm-hmm. If you make your brain better, your nervous system better, man, you're a better fighter.
Yeah,
it's not only physical. Physical enhancement, it was in the 80s. Now we're in the 2000 year now. Now it's neurologic, man. That's when it's crazy dangerous. And soon it will be like with the gene doping, forget it, man. The athlete will be born athlete. You won't be, a guy like me or like anybody that fight in UFC won't be able to compete in UFC anymore because they're not superhuman. Right. You know what I mean?
No, I agree.
In
that's
the future,
coming.
Sport will be so messed up, it will be crazy. Yeah. We're all going to be gamers, play video game.
Yeah, right? Yeah, you're probably right.
We're all going to be gamers. This will be end. This thing that like being an athlete will It's not going to make any sense in the future, I believe. You know, maybe it will be completely ridiculous. It's like, oh, you're not born. You're never going to be... You know what I mean? And it will be real because you're not born to be...
An athlete,
You're not bred to be an athlete.
Yeah, they with gene editing, they're going to be able to change your height.
They can do it now.
They haven't really shown that they can do it with humans in America, at least.
It's crazy.
But they're absolutely experimenting with it all over the world.
The cow and every, like, it's insane. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's insane.
They're doing a lot of crazy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think... Maybe it's 100 years, maybe it's 50 years, but whatever it is, in that amount of time, you're going to be dealing with people that are basically superheroes.
Yeah. The sport will be destroyed. That's when that happens, sport will be destroyed.
Yeah. No, I agree with
you.
The
sport will be finished. Like the 100 meter, can you believe?
Right.
Like how freaking fast a human being can be to be closer to 0 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, do you think we'll pass the bar of 9 seconds one day? It's theoretically not impossible in a way. Like, I mean, at one point there's a line that you can't, like, you know, you can diminish the time, but it's like a curves, you know, can't, you know. But if we get that sort of performance enhancing drug, that would be
But there'll
crazy.
Probably be some sort of a side effect to it and some sort of a downside to it. You know, they probably die younger, their tissue will diminish faster, but who knows? Maybe they'll be able to regenerate stuff.
If you talk to some doctor that knows, like I know you have done, they said that steroid, like performance enhancing drug, if they do it well, some people don't have any side effect of it.
Right. If you don't abuse it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, man, maybe it won't have any side effect. Maybe everybody will be on it. Maybe it will be like an iPhone will be like, oh, that's like,
right.
Who knows? Who knows the future? Who knows? You know?
Yeah, it's totally possible. I mean, you might be in a lot of ways one of the last of the natural athletes.
Maybe it's a few more years before we get there, but yeah, man. Yeah. It when I think about it, it's gonna be finished. It's gonna be, I don't know. Maybe we're all gonna be video game players or whatever.
When you see yourself competing again, how much longer do you think you'll wait out? I mean, you're 37 now. When do you think you'll be healthy enough? When will your colitis feel good enough? Like, do you have a time period?
It's hard to say. Maybe a few weeks. Maybe it take a few weeks. Maybe 1, 2, 3 months max, maybe maximum.
So
maybe less than that. Maybe less than that.
A little bit of time off, just a little bit of time.
Yeah. So, I want to make sure I get right. past that, because I feel like if I go back into it and it will start all over again, right. and I don't want that. It was bad, Joe. I couldn't sleep night. I cramp, like bad cramp. Mm-hmm. Like I stay up all night and had the sparring the next day. Oh my god, it was crazy, man. It's very yeah. bad. Yeah, I had blood. I had to go in the bathroom. I had blood, man. You feel like you want to go to the bathroom, but then nothing comes out, then it's the blood that come out, man. You look at the bathroom, you see the blood, you think, it's like, man, what's wrong? Right. You think it's like the Dream Catcher, the movie with
Steve,
yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, what the hell? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy, man. You're like, what's happening with me? Am I dying? I was very worried. I don't want to go back to this. Right. I want to make sure I take care of this stuff, you know?
So just maybe even a few more months of just taking care of your body.
Maybe a month, week. I want to see. When I feel good, I let a little bit time. When I feel like 100%, like I don't feel anything, like sometimes I still feel like when I'm going to eat, I feel not the cramp, not the pain, but I feel inside is something different.
Right.
But it diminish every week. It's every month it diminish. I see a difference.
So if you do go back, and you'd go back to 55. Have you tried to make that cut before?
I never tried, and I won't. I'm going to explain to you. I'm not a fan of weight cutting. I think weight cutting should be like a marathon runner. A marathon runner, when you train for a marathon, he never does a marathon in his training.
Mm.
He does half or maybe a quarter of it at different things. So it's not healthy to lose your weight.
Right.
You dehydrate yourself. And starving is not that bad, but it's more the dehydration problem. Me, I'm very worried about health issue, and I don't want this very important. So when I do it, I go all in. I'll do like the Bisping fight. I never tried to get my weight much. It's different, you know, when you go up and go down. But
right.
I said, yes, I do it, and I go, and I, you know what I mean, and I do it. I like the thrill of it, the excitement of the unknown.
Well,
it kind of excites me in a way. I don't know if you know. So it's kind of an experimentation. It's live. I cannot mess up.
Right.
That's what excites me. It's not the, oh, I know I can't. No, I don't know, man. I'm going to do it now. It's happening now. That's what excites me.
Well, there's guys that are your size, like Kevin Lee is your size. You know, he makes
Kevin Lee is about my size. I think,
he's a big guy.
Khabib is about, I think, close to 200. I saw Tony Ferguson is like he was posting picture. He was 200. I never been naturally 200. Like when I fought Bisping, at one point I was almost 200. Like I was like big guy. Like, but I was like all like water retention. I didn't feel right. It was not feeling good, man.
Yeah, Kevin is a big guy, and there was an article today I saw somewhere that was saying, you know, that Kevin really wants a 165 pound weight class. Like he can't really make 155. Yeah. Very much longer.
I think he will be the best, man, this guy. I think
he's like, good.
If I look at all the new guys that are coming, it's freaking scary, man.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 37. Maybe I have one, or maybe one, two, maybe three. I don't know. Like, I do my thing and I get out of here, man.
When do you think you're going to retire? Do you have an idea?
Oh, I'm never going to. 40? It's impossible that I fight past 40.
Impossible.
I'm not going to fight in a cage at 40 years old, man.
But
it's
you're
like,
37.
Man, it's like a kid. It's like a kid that play. Like that's Arnold Schwarzenegger. What he says to me, it's like a kid that play with a train. He's 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old, 5 years old. Then you look at the train when he gets 6 years old. He's like, "What the hell I'm doing with that train?" At 40 years old, it's finished for me. Fighting in a cage, are you? I've done it. It's like it's not interesting right now. 40 years old, I'm a grown man. I'm not gonna fight in a freaking cage at 40 years old.
But that's only 36 months from now. You're saying it like it's forever.
Yeah, exactly. So it has to happen fast.
It has to happen fast.
And if it don't happen, I'm happy. I'm happy too.
Well, the comeback alone was like one of the greatest comebacks ever.
Yeah.
To come back after 4 years, win the title, beat the champion, and beat him definitively. Rear naked choke, put him to sleep.
That's why, Joe, it need to be something that really excites me. Because I'm going to tell you something. One of my friends, C.T. Fletcher, he says something.
I love C.T. Fletcher.
He's amazing.
He just had his heart transplant.
Yeah, he's doing good now. He's better.
Send out some love to C.T. Yeah.
C.T., you're the inspiration, man.
Yeah, man.
C.T., you're inspiration, man.
We love that guy.
He says satisfaction is the death blow. And it's true. Now I'm happy, I'm satisfied. But if I see something...
Satisfaction is what? What did you say?
It's death blow, it's finish. If you're satisfied... If you're a champion and you're satisfied, you retire, man, because you're going down, you finish, right. You're going to get hurt.
Yeah.
As an athlete, especially in our game. Now, man, everything I do, I go further and further. Right. That's why I didn't want to fight Nate Diaz. Because if I fight Nate Diaz, if it's been done before, it's not excited for me. And I would be going into that fight satisfied. And if I do that, it's very dangerous. So I want to do something that I'm like the 155, I'm like, I never did it before, title, like, or beating a certain guy that he's on a freaking rise. And
well, that would be Khabib then, because like Khabib has already beaten Conor.
Khabib, I don't know, if they're new guy that do something that is unbeatable.
Right.
And me, I come back, I'm like, oh, George never going to beat that. When you say never, man, I love it. You say never when Dana, as crazy as it is, when you said never going to come back, it excite me. You know? When you say I cannot do that, it's never been done before, that's mean if I do it, it will be the first time, that excite me. Yeah. That really turned me on. There's a lot of things that turn me on in life. Is women, dinosaurs, and this.
Dinosaurs.
People that say, don't, that really make me going crazy.
Why dinosaurs?
No, but it's paleontology. Since I'm kidding,
I
study paleontology.
Wow, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, I traveled the world during those 4 years off, by the way.
Did you?
Yeah.
What did you do during those 4 years off?
I traveled a lot of the world on the site.
Sightseeing?
Yeah. I would never be, that made me realize too that I could never be a paleontologist. I don't have the patience to go
with a toothbrush.
For hours, I would drive me. I like to get the knowledge of it, to be on the field, to get the knowledge fast.
Right.
But I don't like to work to get the knowledge.
Right.
Which make me not a real paleontologist. The paleontologist is willing to put the work into it.
Yeah.
In MMA, I'm willing to put the work into it to become the champion, you know?
Yeah.
But in paleontology, that's how I because at one point I thought I liked both equally. Now I realize, no, I like the sport better.
The problem with the sport of MMA is so exciting. And paleontology is probably very exciting once you find like a T-Rex head or something like that.
It's the knowledge, man.
Yeah,
it's very,
the knowledge is exciting.
I have a thing in every month. Every time they have a discovery, it's in my phone.
Oh, like an app?
Yeah. Yes. Nice. Every time it's a new discovery or something, like, boom. And my friend, they make fun of me. They're like, man, you fight in a cage, you beat up people, you like paleontology, what's wrong with you? Because they make fun of me. I went in Argentina in Patagonia. I was there with paleontologists, biologists, and microbiologist on site, you know? And I had a blast, man. It was amazing. But people was like, George is gone in a freaking bad land and by him, like, alone, isolated for the rest of the world to do that kind of stuff, you know? So they were making fun.
Did you find anything?
I did not find it, but I went on site. I saw eggs. I saw sauropod remains, titanosaurs.
They're still in the ground when you were there? Like, yeah, they're finding it, excavating it.
Yeah, but Joe, it's a long process, man.
Yeah.
Has been covered for at least like 66 million years, man. You talk about like, and the place where I was, it was early to Cretaceous. No, it was late Cretaceous, but it was like 100 million years. So that's mean it did not get exposed to oxygen for 100 million years. That's why you got, it's like a crime scene, man. Where you go on these things, it's freaking there, man. It's like a crime scene that you discover, but like a 100 million years crime scene, man. You see these sauropods, man, these titanosaurs. It's insane, man.
Well, it's crazy too that it's not even really a bone anymore. The mineral has replaced the bone, and you just get the shape of the bone that's sort of been fossilized.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's why if you see like megalodon teeth, they're black.
I have in my house the megalodon teeth.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, it's insane, man. Megalodon is like the strongest bite force ever recorded, man. It's crazy.
It's a big fucking animal. Yeah, it was a huge fish.
Yeah, you feed on whales. Like, it's crazy. But like, this is one of the things that really excited me. So during those 4 years I was doing, man, I had a blast. I didn't have the time to do it before that. And I felt like it was missing in my life.
Really? Paleontology is missing in your life. Yeah. That's fascinating.
I went to Alberta. I went also in Dakota in the United States.
Oh, Dakota, yeah.
Now I want to go in Egypt. Egypt and Morocco, there is some site that there were once upon a time. It was like I'm talking about this, probably nobody cares, but I love it. There were like three giant apex predator living in the same, like a giant crocodile, Sarcosuchus, Carcharodontosaurus, and Spinosaurus. These two live in the same area.
Wow.
I wonder what happened. Like three alpha freaking predators living at the same time. I wonder if they interact with each other, and it must have been a crazy time, man.
I have a friend, and one of his good friends has a ranch in Montana, and he found something on the ranch, and he called this paleontologist, and they went to his ranch, and they shut the place down. Like, dude, you got a T-Rex here.
Really?
Yeah.
Montana, yeah.
They gave him over $1 million for it.
Yeah.
And they excavated this T-Rex in his ranch, and apparently it was a really good specimen.
In Canada, if you find something, it's part of it. It belongs to the government.
Let's say you
find a bone in your backyard. It doesn't belong to you.
Oh,
can you believe it?
Fucked up.
Yeah, that sucked, man. It's very bad.
That's America's got you guys beat for that.
When I was young, Joe, I remember I used to live in countryside. I used to go and try to go to find bones, but I didn't know back then. I was not educated, so I thought maybe I could find dinosaurs. I was spending hours and trying to find dinosaurs. Every rock I took, I thought it was a dinosaur. I used to bring it back. And my mom said, yeah, it's a dinosaur's teeth. Yeah, right there. Because it was kind of a triangular shape. But then I found out all the place where I come from, it was all erosion. So there's nothing from Cretaceous or Jurassic or Triassic back then. It's all like before that. So it's all gone.
Yeah.
So it's just crazy, man. It's been a long time.
I was in Montana once, and there's this area that used to be the Great Western Inland Sea. And this area, like the ground is like this mucky ground, especially when it rains.
Yeah,
it's essentially silt, like the bottom of a lake. You know that
because
silt.
it was like a sea in between,
it was an
cutting
sea.
cutting the America in half. Yes,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Appalachia and La Ramedia, the two continent.
Yeah, look, you know all about that.
I can know this, man. I know as much as MMA with this.
Really?
Stuff. Almost, yeah.
Wow.
Like, maybe not, but I am passionate with this, man, a long time.
It's fascinating when you're walking around this area in Montana. It's called the Missouri Breaks, and because this ground, it does feel like, you know, if you've ever, like, seen a lake bed, if the water recedes, it's got that silty sort of weird mud. This is all, the whole ground is like this.
Yeah.
It sticks to your boots. Like, it gets heavy and clumps on the bottom of your boots. It's like this muck.
Maybe, man, we don't know what the future will look like, man. Sometimes I'm thinking, Joe, I'm like, you know what, people talk about the environment. They say, the pollution will make, we have hot air and ice age. Hot air, mm-hmm. It's been going forever. But sometimes I'm thinking, I'm like, yeah, okay, of course, the pollution and the human has an effect on the climate.
Yeah.
But I wonder how big we have an effect. Some people say it's debatable. Is it that big or is not that big? Some says it's yes, it is bad. Some says yeah, it's bad, but we don't have that much of an effect as, mm-hmm. You know. I don't know about that. I would like to have a clear answer to for that. I think we have an effect, but I wonder how now we're going in the hot air. The glaciers are melting, but the hot air will go to an ice age. You know that, right? Because of the current and everything. So I wonder how much of an effect and how long it'll take, mm-hmm. You know, because we don't have any recent record of how long everything takes. We know a little bit, but not that much, you know?
It's a fascinating subject.
Yeah,
for
man.
Sure.
Are we going to live through that time? Probably not, but I'm like, you know what I mean? It's like how long it will take. I'm very interesting about that. That's why I love these things. Learning from the past make you understand sometimes the present and the future. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm very fascinated by it. Are you still interested in aliens? Is
that yeah,
still,
man.
This, still?
So that's the thing. When I first came on your show, you cut me really off guard. Because most people that we talk about aliens, they completely think you're crazy or you disregard. Right. It's like, oh, you're going to talk about, like, you know, they most people that I attract with, they... You know, they so you feel like ridiculous.
Right.
Then And then after I found out, you read a lot about that stuff, like the Sumerian text, the creation tablet, Zachariasation, and all that stuff. And I do too. I mean, I don't know if there's, like, if there is alien. Like, I think there would be life form. I don't know if it's intelligence. We don't have evidence for it.
Right.
And I think our ego as human being want us to believe that the alien came and interact with us.
Yes.
That's our ego. But if they're that far in advance from us and they come from a different world, maybe they don't want to interact because we have nothing to offer them. They're not going to kidnap a farmer and ask him what kind of suspension is wearing. You know what I mean? Like they think, you know what I mean? It's
but think about what you just said about paleontology. I mean, we're paying attention to stupid fucking lizards that lived 65 million years ago.
It's true.
I mean, don't you think they would be curious, this weird monkey with nuclear weapons?
Yeah, but we don't communicate with it. We don't interact. Right. We observe. There's ways that it can learn from us without communicating. I don't know. I mean, it's. Yeah. I think it's our ego that make us, we want to feel special. We want to feel that like, oh, we're different, you know, like we're different beings than, for example, a dog or, we can think because we're smart, but. Like, I don't know how this has been giving to us. Like, I don't know, you know, like, and you were talking about it, like, when I was young, I used to have, like, we talked about it last time. You said, you were talking about, like, the experience. I said, I remember that I remembered, but I can't recall it. When I was young, I don't know if it's a dream. I remember I used to draw. Figure of monster. I say my mom is like, it's the monster. They come get me at night. That's what we talked last time.
Right, right.
But I was very uncomfortable, and I didn't want to talk about it because I was like, man, how the hell he knows it? You know everything, man. This guy he knows everything. He made research and stuff. So I made the drawing, and then my mom, even now today, I said, hey. I want to see the drawing, you know, like, I show the drawing, and I'm like, and then after I remember later, I remember that I remember, but I couldn't remember. You understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. I remembered that I remember that something that happened, but now I can't remember what exactly happened.
Right.
Could be a nightmare. Could be another sleep paralysis or
paralysis. Yeah,
my imagination. Mm-hmm. I don't have evidence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's why we talked about it last time, and that's what happened to me. And I hope it's nightmare. It's nightmare. You know what I mean? But the thing is, later on, I saw some documentary on TV. I saw some people that had the similar experience as me, loss of memory and things like this when they were young. And they claim they get a hypnose and stuff. Then they go back in time and they explain they get abducted by alien. Then I start to freak out about it because I said, man, is that what happened to me? But there is a lot more logical explanation. You know what I mean? But that's why when you brought that back, I freaked out. I was like, how the hell he knows this? Like, how the hell he knows this? Like, I didn't want to talk about it, but then Then it was also my agent was there. He's like, hey, we need in 10 minutes. I'm like, we were misinformed. We didn't know that podcast was like that long and this. I was like, all these things in my head, like, beep, 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 beep. I didn't know what to make of it, you know?
Mm.
So that's what it was.
Yeah. it's entirely possible that we're experiencing something when we're dreaming, when we're unconscious, that maybe there's dimensions that consciousness travels to that are non-physical. That, like, this dimension, what we're in right now, we could touch this table, move this microphone around.
Yeah.
These are physical dimensions. But it's entirely possible that whatever your spirit is or your consciousness or your mind, when you're thinking of your thoughts and your soul, that
you
as
say,
you're
say,
sleeping.
You said you're a soul.
Yeah, whatever that means.
You believe is a soul. You believe.
I don't know what that means, though.
Okay,
it's a weird word, right?
Okay.
It has religious connotations, but
I agree.
But the idea of whatever your essence is as a human being, there's something inside of all of us that makes us conscious and aware and there. And then that something is not there when you're sleeping. And so is it dormant? Is it just recovering, which is, you know, the scientific version of it? Or is it possible that while you're in this dream state and your body shuts off, that your mind and your consciousness travels to a non-physical dimension that you can only access through the chemicals that are released in your brain, which we know produce psychedelic experiences. So if you took the chemicals that are released during your brain or inside your brain, like dimethyltryptamine, and there's all sorts of different psychedelic chemicals that are produced by the mind. If you take these outside of, you know, the dream state, if you take these drugs, you have these crazy, fantastic experiences. Mm-hmm. And we know these are produced by the brain.
They produce. Yeah. They produce by the brain also.
Yes, yeah, they're produced by the brain. They're produced by the liver and the lungs. Yeah. We believe they're produced by your third eye, which is your pineal gland. Mm-hmm. They've shown, the Cottonwood Research Foundation has shown that this is done in rats, that rats produce dimethyltryptamine in their pineal gland. Yeah. Doesn't necessarily mean that people do, but it's logical to imply that people probably, or conclude that people probably do it as well. So those chemicals that are producing these psychedelic experiences are being released by the brain, but we don't know why and we don't know what they're doing.
When you sleep, like you have a guy, Matthew Walker.
Yes, it was amazing, right?
When you sleep, your guardian, your logic is not there. That part of your brain is gone.
Right. Yeah.
So we could. That's probably the most logical experience. But it's kind of a freaking scary thought of thinking that, man. Is like it make you wonder sometimes. Sometimes you're at night alone and you're thinking, man. And me, I'm a guy that think a lot. You know, I'm thinking about all kind of scenario. Like in a fight, I think about all scenario, but in life, I'm the same way. Yeah. I'm thinking, what if this happened for real, or what if, like, man, it's a scary talk, man. It's nothing more scary in the world.
Well, what is scarier? Is it scary to think that when you die, you're just gone and nothing happens? Or is it scary to think that your consciousness leaves this physical dimension and goes into what's essentially a well of souls? Just a dimension, a non-physical dimension of consciousness where all consciousness interacts with each other and it's just geometric patterns that don't have a physical being attached to them.
It's hard for me to believe the consciousness is not material. Because let's say you would say, sometimes people say, oh, he's a good person, he's a bad person. I don't believe there is good and bad person. I believe there is no baby born good or bad. I believe it's your environment and that shape you.
It has a lot to do with it. Genes have a lot to do with it.
So when you say the mind, let's say I'm a certain way. You know me as a certain way. And it happened to me. I know I have a friend that happened to him. He was my best friend. And he's dead now, unfortunately. He was a certain way. But he got a car accident. I remember after his car accident, he changed, man. He was not the same guy. He became a little bit paranoid. He had some kind of dementia.
Yeah.
So the person I knew was kind of dead.
Yes.
But it was physically... the DNA, everything was the same, but the person is different.
Right.
So when you say the soul, the mind, if it would be really not materialistic, that would not have changed. But his personality was completely different.
Mm-hmm.
He had a short temper. I remember he had a girlfriend, was extremely jealous. He was starting to beat her and stuff. He was completely different person that you knew before. So if they say the mind, your brain is materialism, but your mind is not. So if you have an accident like my friend, and maybe you have some sort of dementia or something, that means if it's not materialism, it would not happen.
It's possible, but it's also
hard. It's hard to say, right. and you have the explanation that are like subjective and objective. If I pinch you, you say I'm hurt. There is no objective way for me to tell you that you really hurt. Because even if I go and I open your brain, I can't see it.
Right,
you know, the
right.
only way I know is because of my experience, but it can't prove it.
Right.
So fucking, who knows? Who really knows? I don't know.
It's also possible that when you think of consciousness or the soul or what's going on in the mind, that it's expressed through the body. And then when the body is damaged, that consciousness is damaged as well, because your consciousness is now being expressed through a lack of certain hormones. Your mind itself, the very brain, might be an antenna or something that uses consciousness in order to move through life, but that consciousness is independent from the brain, and that the brain being damaged is just expressing consciousness in a fucked up way because you've got dementia or Parkinson's or what other neurological disorders that people have. But at the center of it, it's still the same thing. It's one of the things that people say when they have, like,
so,
Muhammad
so you mean
Ali,
if you let's say you die, you finish, mm-hmm. the best out of you will still exist somewhere?
Not necessarily
somewhere
the best
in
out of you, but you independent of the body. And these are just theories.
Okay, okay.
But there are people that believe that consciousness is non-local and that the body actually is just like an antenna for your consciousness. Now, if the body is damaged, if your hormonal balance is all fucked up, your neurological system is out of whack, you have, like, one of the things that Muhammad Ali said when they were talking to him about his Parkinson's is that he's still in there. He just can't express himself because his body had been damaged by so many fights and so many hard sparring sessions and so many blows to the head that he wasn't capable of expressing himself. But inside, he was still the same guy. But he was trapped. His consciousness was trapped in a broken body.
Oh, I see. It's like a prison, locomotion system.
Yeah.
I see what you're trying.
And, you know, when you think about CTE, like a lot of these football players, like, you know, that Aaron Hernandez guy that was a murderer.
Yes.
And he was a football player, and they examined his brain after he was dead, and like, this is one of the worst cases of CTE we've ever seen. After he killed himself in prison, they examined him, and the idea is that your consciousness is supposed to be expressing itself through a healthy brain, right? Through healthy hormones, a healthy endocrine system, a healthy neurological system, and that in that way your consciousness can express itself and do so without any physical hindrances. Then there's also psychological hindrances.
Yeah, but what is LT? At
what
age?
LT? Yeah,
yeah, but
right.
What age
good,
are you LT?
The
moment you start breathing and living, there's some sort of change that occur in your body.
Yeah,
so,
sure. Yeah.
So what is the LT state?
That's a
15,
good question.
12, 1 year old, and then...
Right.
You're
good
1 year
question.
Old, you're not the same person at 15, and 15,
right.
You're not the same as 30.
I think it's...
30, you're not the same as 60.
There's no independence. I think they're all connected. And I think that, you know... The physical vitality of the body is important. The vitality of the mind's important. But I think there's probably something, you know, when the first time I saw a real dead body, like up close, was my grandfather. My grandfather died. And, you know, went to the funeral. They had an open casket. It was very strange. But one thing that I realized when I was standing there, I'm like, he's not even there. He's not here. Like, he's not here.
Yeah.
This body. I mean, this might have been where my grandfather lived. He might have lived in this body, but he's not here anymore.
Yeah.
It was a very strange feeling to me because it was like internally I realized. I'm like, I get the fact that he's dead and he's not moving and that this is his body. He's been embalmed and they put makeup on you and all this weird shit. But it was also this feeling like he's not there. He's gone.
Yeah.
You know, but what is the body then? Is the body a vehicle for whatever you are?
Yeah. It's maybe one day we'll know. Maybe we won't.
It's one of those philosophical questions. It's conceptual. It's also, you know, people have their ideological reasons for believing one thing or another. There's people that are nihilists that think, you know, it's over when it's over, and then you go to black, and that's it. You're done. End of story. Nothing happens when you're dead. Well, you don't know that because you've never died.
We can't know.
Yeah, it's a real... It's a real open-ended question.
So. I'm on the same page as you for this. I do not know.
Yeah.
I a lot of idea has been presented to me. A lot of the idea I rejected because it didn't make sense to me logically. Like the sense, like all the, do you believe in free will?
Right, that's a good one.
If my phone is there and it falls, there's a reason why it falls. The asymmetry of the phone make it fall. Maybe I blew.
Right.
Maybe is a reason.
Yeah.
I won't say my phone only fell, but if you do something wrong, for example, you kill someone. You just not decide, like, kill someone. Like, there's a reason why you do something. And if you go back, the reason, there's a reason of the reason of the reason. It's like it's like a domino.
Yep, yep.
Sometimes I'm thinking, I'm like, man, it make me think like I have no choice.
Right.
Like, oh, you're world champion, you work for it. I say, yeah, but I have no choice.
Well,
so I have no, I don't deserve any props because I have no choice.
Right. You are the product of your life experiences.
To me, that's what makes the most sense for me.
Yeah.
People think I'm crazy, but I have an argument with a lot, sometimes, like a lot of religious people, they say, oh, yeah, this or that, but like, I, 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 that's what I believe. I believe sometimes, like, it doesn't mean I don't believe in God, or I don't, it doesn't mean I'm different, like, in my belief, but I believe I have no choice. If I do something, I have no choice.
But you do have ethics, and you do have morals, and you do make decisions. So that's where it gets slippery.
I don't think I made decision.
No?
And then it was a cause to that decision. There is a cause to everything. And by definition, there is a cause. There is no free will.
Well, it's a good argument. I've heard it. I mean, Sam Harris argued it to me the best and made me really reconsider. And Robert Sapolsky, who is a famous scientist and deals with a lot of the functions of the human brain in terms of, like, our motivations for things, his take was that in the future that will be, you know, when we look back today at, like, people that burn people for witchcraft and stuff like that, how foolish they are.
Yeah.
He thinks we will have the same reaction to people judging and punishing people based on their behaviors.
I agree 100%.
Wow.
Just go back in time, back in the, I think it's ancient Greek.
Mm-hmm.
The men that were teaching knowledge to kids in exchange of sexual favor. There was it happened.
Yeah.
Now we call that pedophilia. It's wrong. We put the people in prison. But back in the day, it was normal. You know what I mean? Sometimes our conception of good and bad, or choice, you know, I choose. Like, I don't know, man. I don't believe there is good and bad. I don't believe choice. I have a hard time to believe I choose something.
Well, there's certainly things that you think are more positive than negative, right? Like being kind to people and friendly to people is more positive than being, you know, a murderer.
Yeah, let's say you have a gun. Let's say you want to kill someone. It's, hey, George, can you borrow me a gun, please? As I, oh, yeah, I'm nice. A nice gesture, I will give you a gun. But then you go kill someone. So is my gesture is nice or is not nice? Good, bad, it all depends on how you see, Joe. It all depends on how you see. It
depends on why you're giving the person the gun, right? Oh, hey, this guy raped a little kid. Yeah. Give me your gun. I'm going to go kill him. It's like, oh, yeah, I'll do a good thing and I'll let you borrow my gun so you can go kill this bad person.
Okay, then my argument is, okay, you want to go, you said, George, give me your gun. I want to go kill this guy. I said, okay, I go give you the gun. This guy is Adolf Hitler. You go kill him. It's a good thing or bad thing? To certain people will be good, so certain people will be bad.
Mm.
It depends what's is good, bad.
Yeah.
So I sometimes I'm thinking, like, man, all this, who knows, man?
Who knows?
We freaking don't know, man.
Yeah. That's the interesting thing about life, is that there's a lot of things in life that are messy. There's not a simple answer.
Yeah, yeah. So we have choices. It's like a pool game.
Yeah.
If mathematically I can... Like, I had this talk with Ferraz, and Ferraz is very smart. He studied philosophy. He had a degree in philosophy. It's like fighting. You fight a guy. You study his pattern. You know, like, when you do this, he do that. When you do this, he do that. So if you do this, you think he will do that. But maybe he won't, because the environment has changed since then. But, you know, it's the same thing. So if you play pool, if I can measure the strength that I hit the ball, ricochet on certain ball, if I can measure everything precisely, I will know where all the balls are ending up on the table. You agree with that, right?
Yes.
If I know all the data of the universe and I can predict. Do you agree with that? It would be the same thing with you. If I know you by heart, I know your genetic background, I know all the data of the universe, and it's impossible to know. If I would know, I will know specifically what would you do exactly right now.
Right,
if I do
right,
you will know, you know what I mean?
Right.
How you would exactly react or what you're about to say to me.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Right. It's
impossible. That's why I don't believe in free will. I believe it's all, it could be measured, but it's impossible to measure.
Right. And then when you see people that are doing good things and achieving good things, it motivates you to do good things and achieve things. And that also changes all the people around you and makes them move in a certain direction as well. And if you look at certain cultures that are extremely negative and crime-ridden and fucked up, they produce extremely negative, crime-ridden, fucked up people.
Yeah, it's true.
It's like there's all this going on there. Is it the fault of those people? And that's one of the things that people really criticize, and I think rightly so, about, like, hardcore right-wing people that think everyone should be responsible for their own actions. I don't care if you grow up in a crime-ridden neighborhood. You stop doing crime and you be a good person, and that's not an easy task.
The brain has no way to know if an information is relevant or not. If you grew up in a Democrat system with Democrat value, you'll be, if you're smart, you'll be a smarter Democrat. If you grew up in this same, but in a Republican system, you'll be a smarter Republican. However, maybe there are things in your environment that will make you switch. You know,
maybe you hate your dad. You're like, fuck him. I'm going to be a Democrat.
Exactly. Yeah. We don't know, but your brain has no way. So sometimes there's a show on TV like Evil Genius. Mm-hmm. The guy, how come he's so smart, but he's an evil? Like that comes to what we talk about. Like, we don't, good, bad. There's no good, bad. There is no, that's why when I fight, like I fight guys like Nick Diaz or, and I swear it's true. Let's say I drive my car and I see he has a problem with his car, man. I will stop to help him. Like, even though he was not nice or like whoever it is, I will do it. Because for me, I don't think, you know, it's not that I'm nice. It's the way I think, you know.
It's who you are.
Exactly. I have no choice to be like I am. It is what it is, you know.
I've gotten better at that as I've gotten older. Better at forgiving people and not holding grudges and not being upset at people. And if I see someone that I had a problem with in the past, just give them a hug. You know, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's not healthy to carry around grudges.
And it makes you feel good sometimes,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it feels real good. And it feels real bad to keep that hate and anger inside of you. It festers away and you think of, well, if he says this, then I'm going to say that. And fuck him. And he shouldn't have done this. Well, I shouldn't have done that. But yeah, but I only did that because he did this. And you have these little stupid arguments in your head instead of just saying hi and just being friendly or saying you're sorry or saying, hey, man, I don't have a problem with you.
There's a guy that a few years ago, I drove my car on the street in Montreal. It's like in the evening. I see a tall guy coming at me, and he begged for money. Put down my window. This guy, I swear it's true story, is a guy that used to bully me in school.
Whoa.
I say, I don't want to say his name, but I say, hey, wait a second, park the car, go talk to him. I say, what the hell are you doing here, man? He's like, And he thought I would be angry because when he see me, he saw his reaction like shoot, like now I'm world champion, you know, like I can beat him up, you know.
Right.
Back in the day, he was like 3 years older than me, was bigger, he was beating me up in the bus. This guy, now he see me, he's like kind of a scare. I get out of my car. He don't know if he should run or not. So I go to him. I say, what you do here, man? He's like you. He's like, yeah, I know, but things doesn't go well for me, you know. I'm like. I was like, all right. It's like, man, you're a tall guy. You're good looking. It's like, what you doing here, man? It's like, I give him what I have left on me, you know? Like, I don't remember, like 100-something. You know, I give him. I say, get out of here, man. It's like, you're full of potential. It's like, get out of here, man. Like, when I was young, when I wanted to be like you, you're a tall guy, man. You're good looking. It's like, full of potential. So I shake his head. I was like, no problem. And then he say, thank you, George. He get out, then I don't hear about him. Few weeks, few months later, I go to my parents' house for having dinner. Then my dad say, hey, you know who come to the house a few days ago? This guy. I'm like, yeah, I met him. He said, yeah, he said you met him in the street, but now he said he came to thank you. He came, he wanted to talk to you, but I said, you don't live here, and I didn't want to give you a number. But he said, George, he talked to me. And he said, he changed my life. Now I have a job and I feel good. I just want to say thank you to him. And it feels so good. Like, wow. Just when I met him and I didn't get angry at him, like, because it was still there. He did very bad stuff to me when I was young. But when I see him, it made me feel good. Kind of a relief now.
Yeah.
And this guy, when I was young, he was beating me up in the bus all the time. He was ridiculizing me. I had like Adidas pants that you can tight like this. He was like taking off. So I was like in underwear in front of everybody, in front of the girl. He was beating me up all the time. And he was stronger than me. He was like 3-4 years older than me. And he was tall and strong guy. He's a hockey player back in the day. And I couldn't beat him. Even with martial art, he was always stronger than me. He hurt me a lot like back in the day. So my dad, one time I was got beat up in the bus. So I told him, because I came back with a black eye. One time in my life, I told my dad what happened. I never said anything, but I said my dad, I said, yeah, he's a guy in the bus, he beat me up. I said, I tell him the name of the guy. So my dad, what he did, he found out where I'm from countryside, so everybody knows who everybody lives. He goes to the house, he knock, talk to the dad. He say, listen, can you tell your son to stop hitting my son in the bus because he need to be focused on the school? And the dad, when my dad came back, he said, hey, I want to talk to his dad. He's going to stop. So he said his dad was like drinking and stuff, and he was beating the shit out of his son. So the way this guy learned to communicate to his dad was beating him up. He was drunk and beating him up. That's the way he was communicating with me. He was beating me up because he learned the same way from his dad to communicate. So I was just happened to be at the right the wrong time at the right time in his life at the perfect. You know, I was the guy that was getting beat. So when we say good and bad, he was not a bad person. To my version of life, from my perspective, he was a terrible person back then. He was terrible. I wanted to kill him. He made my school time miserable, man. I was humiliated all the time. I was getting beat up, and I was a very proud person. So I used to go fight him all the time because I was proud. And at one point, I fought him so many times. He said, oh, this guy is completely insane. I stopped bothering him because I was never giving up, even though I was getting beat up all the time. But to my own eyes, he was a bad person. But through his eyes, it was a different story. And through his father, it was a different story. To everybody, it was a different story.
Yeah.
Just to say that when I met him, that what we talk about, like, it feels so good. Just to meet him in the street and make kind of a peace and give him money. Like, yeah, you beat me up. You didn't. But you know what? Even though you did that, I give you the money. And now it make me feel like I'm kind of a revenge. Yeah. Better than a revenge. It make me feel like, yeah, man, you see, without me, you wouldn't have nothing maybe to sleep or eat tonight. So I give it to you. I still give it to you if you do that to me. That make me feel much better than if I would, like, beat him up.
Yeah. And don't you think that maybe that guy and him doing that to you was one of the reasons why you became a champion? Because you got into martial arts very heavily because of being bullied.
Yeah, because I was beating up in school. Maybe it was. But he was not the only guy that was beating me up. All his friends. But he was kind of the guy that was all the girl liked. And he was like the taller, stronger guy. So he was kind of the alpha guy at the time. Maybe it was an influence. Like I said, I don't believe only one thing influenced me. But it's many things, many causes that make that happen. But maybe it's one of the causes, yes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I could be wrong, I could be right, but that's my philosophy in life. That's how I think. So everybody says, oh, George, you're a true martial artist, you're a good guy. That's why I thank you. I don't have the time to explain to them everything I just told you.
Right.
But that's how I think. And when they say you're a good guy, I was like, thank you. I'm not a fucking good guy. I'm me. I'm myself. I am. But it makes me happy when people say that.
But like, you are a good guy, and you try to be a good guy.
I try to be.
That's who you are.
Yeah, I try to be.
That's who you are.
I try to be good model, good role model. I think it's important for me through my value that I've been raised. You know.
Yeah.
But doesn't mean like I don't like other guys. I like the guys that I like the most to watch their fight. They're not the good guy.
Yeah.
My favorite fighters to watch are not the good guys.
Yeah.
Charles Sonnen, I like to watch him. Nick Diaz, I like to watch Nick Diaz. Mm-hmm. I like Conor McGregor when he fights. I like him.
Yeah.
The good guys are boring, man. They're boring guys. They make me fall asleep. I like the drama. I like, even though I don't act like it, I like it. People will be like, I know it's completely contradictory. I love the Tito Ortiz back in the day. He was my favorite.
Yeah.
Man, Tito Ortiz, man, he was amazing. Came with his flag, like bad guy, man. I loved it, man. Star Wars, I love the Sith Lord. They're much more charismatic than the Jedi. Are you kidding me? Jedi, Karate Kid, the new Karate Kid. I watched the first episode. I'm hoping Daniel San get beat up all the time, you know? Johnny Lawrence, I hope he smashed his head. He didn't do it. So, you know what I mean? That make me a bad person? No, it's just I like, you know, it's different. The way, that's how you see things, you know?
Right, when you see a lion chasing a gazelle, do you root for the gazelle? I hope the lion catches the gazelle.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Is that good or bad? Like, people, and don't eat meat, it's not natural.
Right.
It's like, what is natural? What is not natural, man?
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation.
When you talk about this, it, people think, oh, Saint-Pierre is just, he just get hit in the head too many times, but it's just not, now my English is good. I can communicate it through it with you. Like, like it's easier. I feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
And it is what it is, but that's why I like it, because you're a person too. I'm kind of a big fan of you too, and I know you. I didn't know that in the beginning when I first to know you, but now I know that you get interested in the same thing that I am interested. And what I like about you, Joe, is you don't give a damn. You do whatever, you have no boss. You do whatever you want, whenever you want, with who you want. And me, I respect that. It's kind of a code. You have your own code that you do, and I respect that. I like human being like this. I like to be with human being like this. Guys, I have no code. I don't like this.
Yeah.
I don't like me. My circle of friends is short. You know, I have a few guys I like. I keep I'm diplomatic with a lot of people, but I'm not friend with a lot of people.
Yeah.
I'm diplomatic because I have to be for my work, for my business, for the person I am. And I don't like confrontations. So I'm diplomatic, but doesn't mean I like everybody, you know?
Well, I think your relationships that you have with people, the exchanges you have with people, it's very important to keep only positive, influential, strong people around you, because you learn and you grow from those people, and they give you fuel. When you're around people who are inspirational or doing interesting things, who live their life by a code, who are ambitious, who succeed, who try hard, difficult things, those are the people that inspire and give you energy. And I feel better around them. I feel like I get energy from them, versus people that are always making excuses, and people that are always falling short, people that fail all the time, and people that complain all the time. Those people are the opposite. And those people, they take away from you. And you're around them, you're just like, oh, I just got to get away from this guy.
However, it doesn't mean that the good people that you have in your life will always be the good people for different situations.
Right.
Example. Before a fight, my families, I stay the hell away from them. I'm going to explain to you why. It's my family, they care about me. I remember before a fight, before I used to go eat at my parent, with my parent and my family, it used to be like the last dinner. They eat their soup, they look at me like, are you okay? You feel good? You're not sick, huh? And before a fight, I need to feel like I'm going to war with my soldier. I need to feel that what I'm doing, it's normal, even though it's not.
Yeah.
So when I hang out with my family, they have a normal life. So what I do, they see me like an outcast. Like, man, this guy is completely insane. He's about to go fight in a cage. He can die. Oh, my God. Yeah. And I feel that because they love me. So my family, before the fight, I stay away from them. I stay away from a lot of the people that I love, that are my circle of friends or real people I love, like family. And I bring back closer the people like Faraz, John, the fighters, guys. Even guys that are maybe not as much as my friend, they like.
They understand the mentality.
Yes. So it make me feel normal. It make me feel strong, because we go in war. When you go in war, you don't bring your wife, your kid, your family. You bring the people that you go in war with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's very important for me. So it's depending what's going on, I believe, good and bad people, you know, it's not always good, not always bad, depending their context, you know?
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Especially them being nervous about your fight, like being nervous. That energy is contagious.
Bro, I'm already nervous. Like it is. I don't want to be more nervous.
Yeah.
And I hate fighting. People say, no, you don't. I really do. And I know you, maybe a lot of people don't believe me, but I'm going to try and explain the best I can. In every jobs, there is no perfect job. Do you agree that there's no perfect job that you like everything
right.
about it? It's impossible. My job as a professional athlete in mixed martial art, on 365 days, I fight. Normally, when I was very active, I used to fight twice a year approximately. Not more than that. I never wanted to more than that, because I wanted to stretch, especially when you want to stretch when you're a champion, because it's better for advertising, the also for longevity and everything. So more time, more money, more business-wise and everything, and longevity. So about twice a year. In 365 days, there's 2 days that I hate the most. is the day that I'm fighting. It's freaking unbearable. The feeling of uncertainty that if you don't know if you're going to be humiliated, you're going to be the victor, we're going to be the loser. It's, I care so much about it that it's freaking unbearable. As much as I try to dismiss it, it's unbearable. However, I like the fact that I'm a free man. I'm my own boss. I do whatever I have. I have access to certain things like VIP stuff that most people don't. My quality of life, the money, I didn't have it before, now I do. I love my job. I'm very happy about my job. But there is thing about my job that I hate the most is fighting. I freaking hate. I love the study of fighting. I love the science of it, how I'm the tactical, the physical. I love to train. I love to walk in a room and feel strong. I know if something happened, I'm the man, even though it's an illusion because with a bullet, and nobody is faster than this. But I like that lifestyle. I do it for the lifestyle, for what it is. I don't do it for the fight. I freaking hate to fight. I had this talk with Rory McDonald one point. I was like, hey, why you like fighting? Oh, I guess I like to fight. He said, you like to fight? He's like, fuck no, I don't like to fight. And everybody in the room turn around. They look at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, you guys are all crazy. You think I like to fight in a cage in front of millions of people, maybe get humiliated, knocked out, or die? Are you crazy? I don't like to fight. Are you nuts? I like to win. When you win, it's the feeling is unbelievable. It's so good that it's worth this.
Yeah.
But I hate it, man.
Do you hate the day of the fight, up until the fight? But once the fight starts, how do you feel? Once it starts.
No. When it starts, it's gone. All this is gone.
All the anticipation's gone.
I hate the day.
The build-up.
The day.
Yeah, the day.
And the closer it gets to the day, I love it, but I start to hate it more. It's like a hate that build-up, like a bubble of hate.
Mm.
And by the time that it's time to freaking walk out, the mini second that it's time to walk out, and like Burt Watson used to be the guy, used to kick out the door. Sir Pierre, you ready? Now he's not there anymore, yeah. Unfortunately. I used to like Burt.
He
used to
give me the... We're rolling, boom, boom.
It's like a bubble that built up in my stomach that hate. And I freaking hate. And I'm even in the locker room before the fight. And I fucking hate it. My last fight, it's crazy. I saw my friend Eamon got knocked out, and I go at the dinner. Everybody's like dead people, like this. And I see something is wrong. I say, what's wrong? And it's like they told themselves before I get in the room, don't tell them that Eamon lost. Don't tell him he's gonna affect him. So I get in the room, and my friend Eddie, who wasn't there when they tell each other, first thing he says to me is like in the room, he's like, hey, Eamon lost. I'm like, oh, is it okay physically? He's like, yeah, it's okay. And everybody's like, holy shit. So Eamon lost. I remember Joe Duffy lost. Mickey Gall lost. So I go in my locker room. I see one guy with the ice bag. The other guy is all fucked up like this. And I'm like, man, all my locker room lose, man. Holy shit. I freaking hate this job, man. Then I'm thinking, it's like everybody tried to make me think like, oh, it's going to be good. It's one of my agents like, don't worry, it's going to be fine. It's like, it's okay, man. Don't talk to me like this. I choose to be here. I'm a warrior. And I said, go sit now. It's going to be fine. Like, I want to be a warrior.
Yeah,
I don't want
to
be like,
you don't want to talk to them.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be fine.
The
don't
worst.
Worry.
How and the they go fuck like, do you know?
They go like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like when I found my news the first time, they go like this guy. They grab me like, don't worry, George, it's going to be fine. They look at each other like, he's fighting bad news. He slammed everybody on his head. Holy shit. I'm feeling like I'm going to a cemetery, someone just died. So I'm in the locker room. Everybody freaking lose. I'm like, damn. Then I'm like, okay, shake it up. I go in the bathroom by myself. I go look myself in the mirror. And that's what I do before the fight. I use James Lange theory.
Who?
James Lange they say that the spirit can dictate your mind. They say you're thirsty. Your mind tells, I'm thirsty. You grab the water, and your spirit can dictate your mind, but your mind can dictate your spirit. So I go in the bathroom. I close the door. People think I go to bathroom to piss or whatever, but I don't. Close the door, and I say now I see a lot of negative shit. So I go in front of the mirror. And I say to myself, I say, try to convince myself like a kid, you know, like, I'm the greatest. I'm the strongest. And I think of it looking at me, and I'm this. I'm beautiful. I'm strong. I'm this. I'm faster. I'm stronger. I'm going to win. It's like these young guys, they lose, but I'm going to show them the way to do it. You know, maybe they fail, but I won't. I'm going to show everybody how it should be done. So I come back in the gym with the glory to show them that I achieve it. And that's how it should be done. They're going to follow me, man. So I try to boost myself, man. Open the door, go back. I still hate my job, but I'm a different person than when I got in the door. So I play with mind games like this with myself all the time. It's stuff that I try to change your attitude. And it's very important for a fighter, because the confidence is a key for a fighter. Some guy, they do stuff very basic in a fight, but they do it. When they do it so good and they believe in it. They don't hesitate, and you have no room for hesitation in a fight. You go 100%. And when you go 100% with confidence, that's when the magic can happen. You know what I mean? If you have the skills, but you don't have the confidence, is John says that you have the skills and you have no confidence. It's like having money and you don't spend it. That's what John Denaro told me. But if you have the confidence without the skills, it's not good too. It's like a dream that cannot be achieved. You don't have any way to get there. But if you have both, that's when the magic can happen. I remember when John says that to me all the time. So you have the skill and you have the confidence. And confidence is not a choice. Confidence is not a state of mind. It's a choice, man. You can build it in your head. When something bad happens, you build it and work. Try to work on your person to build it. This is something you can work on yourself, you know? And that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, it's like all these other things you're saying. There's no one answer to how all this is done. All those pieces have to come together. All those pieces have to be together in order for you to be able to just go out there and do it. But I love the fact that you say that you don't like it.
I freaking hate it, man. I hate it probably. Even in the locker room when I got there that night, like every other night that I'm fighting, ask my agent, ask even Ferraz. I always tell him, I look at him as like, so what the hell I'm doing here? What the fuck? I'm so stupid. I should have. Oh my God. And we always laugh at it, because now it become at the point that I know it. People say, hey, with experience, do you become more courageous? Do you become, how do you say, do you lose the fear? You don't lose the fear. You never lose the fear. You learn how to deal with it.
Mm.
You accept it. Before, I did not accept it. In my earlier fight, like Matt Hughes, my first time I fought Matt Hughes, I was fighting this monument, this, oh my God. I didn't sleep for the week, man. I came like a freaking zombie. I was like, oh my God. Like even in the stare down, I couldn't even look at him. I look up like this. It's like I couldn't imagine myself. I knew I was going to lose. The confidence was not there. I have the skill, but it's not the confidence. So it's very important, the confidence, you know. For a fighter, confidence is very important. That's why you have guys in the gym that are very good in the gym. They get into a fight. They shitty fighter. They're king in the gym. They go in a fight. All that stuff crush them. You have guys that are normal in the gym. I've seen guys in UFC, they fight in UFC. They freaking bad. I can't say for the respect, but
right.
I spar with them and they suck. When they fight, they do stuff that it's amazing. I'm like, I didn't even know it. That wasn't his repertoire of technique. He just did a katagatami or something. I'm like, man, it's amazing. I didn't even know he knew that.
Right.
Because of confidence, man. And when you have both the skill and the confidence, like you see like John Jones, man, is magic, man. You go there, pa, 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 spinning freaking elbows and stuff. Like, you don't hesitate, he goes, man.
Yeah.
Yair Rodriguez is amazing. Brr, bam, and stuff like that. It's just beautiful to watch, you know, and I really like that. The new generation, man, is scary as hell. Oh, my God.
Which fight excites you more, Conor or Khabib? Those are the two fights. If I was gonna make a fight for you,
right now, it's like the big fight. The thing is with Khabib, he called me out physically. Now it's not good time for me. I need to wait a little bit. However, I feel the 155 division now is Conor is the champion. There's Ferguson, but I think Ferguson is out, and there's other guys too. But there's the two guys, Conor and Khabib. But Khabib now, I think he's the champion, but he need to fight maybe the Conor or to be like
the real champion.
He's the real champion. I don't like to say the real not champion.
Well, it's a problem.
And my opinion on the belt is really different than most people think. I don't think it should be a belt, you know. I think it should be fight, you know. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is.
I agree with you on that.
Make fun fight. Yeah. There's no belt. So, yeah. Like I said, you cannot be the strongest man in the world. It's an illusion.
Right.
The belt, it claims, it elevates someone like you think he's a god. He's the strongest man in the... No, he's not.
What's a good marketing tool?
That 8th rank guy that can beat you, but maybe he cannot beat the 7 other in front of you.
Yeah.
Or you know what I mean? The 6 other. So...
Yeah.
I don't know how it could be done. It's bad to criticize a system if you don't suggest any alternative. I know it's bad what I do, but it's...
Well, the problem is the system's in flux anyway, right? Because Tony was the interim champion, and he didn't do anything to lose it. All he did is fall down while doing press obligations to tear his knee apart. And then you have Connor, who just didn't defend it, and then they stripped him. And so you're going to give it to Khabib, but he's fighting Al Iaquinta, who ordinarily wouldn't be fighting for the title. So why is he have the potential to fight for the title? It doesn't make any sense. They just had to do it for this event because they had this big event in Brooklyn and they had to have a champion. So they decided this is how they're going to do it. But you got to be careful when you make decisions like that because you, in many people's eyes, in the eyes of the purists, you delegitimize.
They lose value.
Yes.
I agree 100%. Yeah. It lose value too. Especially like what I did make lose value too. Fight Hendrix left. Fight Bisping left. They freaking hate my guts. That's why.
I don't think so though, because I think
it's not good for the brand. It's not good, and I know it's not good. I'm not stupid. I realize it, but I had no choice, man. I go back there, I'm not in condition. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think it was all not my aim. Robbie Lawler won the title, and then Robbie Lawler lost the title to Tyron Woodley. Nobody doesn't think that Tyron Woodley is the legitimate champion because you retired. No, I mean it's a clear path. It makes sense.
No, I understand. The same thing. Like I said, it's not WWE, man. I have to do what is the best for me, and I don't regret my decision. It is. I regret that I stayed too long. I should have retired, maybe take my first stop after Diaz.
Yeah.
Because Diaz was the fight, the big fight, and what you know what I mean? It was the main guy, you know, to fight. Then after, there's always a guy, Joe. That's the thing. There's always another freaking guy. That's the way this sport. You know, we always believe that after that wall, it will be no wall. But no, man, it's always another. Mm-hmm. And I realize that. And every fight are more expected than other and are bigger than other. And it is what it is, man.
It is what it is.
It's a hard, very hard life mentally. Like, depend how you wire psychologically. For me, it was a lot to take.
Well, I think it's part a of lot the reason, to take for me. I have a theory about that. One of the reasons why it's a lot to take is because you're smart. I think smart people, they entertain all the possibilities. They think about all the possibilities. They're aware of all the variables.
I'm a thinker. I think a lot. Yes, yeah. I analyze. I think a lot.
I mean, it's good because it's prepared you very well, and it's made you this incredible martial artist.
Mm.
But it's also, it creates a lot of anxiety because you're aware of all the possibilities. Whereas a person who doesn't think that much, I'm just going to go in there and fuck people up. Like, that person might have an easier path to fight, but they might also have a shorter, limited potential.
Absolutely.
Because they're not aware of all the possibilities, and they're not aware of all their flaws, and they're not aware of all their strengths and weaknesses. They just know what they've done that's worked, and they just keep doing that. And instead of developing this incredibly well-rounded game, they have a very, very limited game. Mm. But that limited game works on some people.
I agree. It's this sport, the sport in general, it's kind of not fair when you look at it. Like, look at Demetrius Johnson. He's probably right now the best
ever.
The best ever, yeah, I agree. Like, man, when I talk about confidence and skills, man, what is the better guy than this? What better guy than this?
Yeah.
Dominic Cruz, freaking amazing. Man, TJ Dillashaw. That's one fight. Look, I don't watch every fight, okay? I don't watch every fight because I'm not a fan of every fighter. But if there's a fight that I will pay my own ticket to sit in front and fly myself, is Demetrius Johnson against TJ Dillashaw.
Absolutely.
Man, it has to be done.
It has to be done.
Crazy.
I agree.
There's always things and factor that we don't know why it doesn't happen. Maybe we don't know everything, unfortunately. And Yeah, like back in the day, me and Anderson Silva, it's a lot of things. Why it didn't happen? Is there stuff that people don't know that back in the day I thought and I wanted to take care of, it didn't happen. But there's this fight, man, is just crazy, man. Sometimes it's sad in the sport, like you have a fight like Mayweather, Pacquiao, and it did not happen. Yeah. It sucked, but it is what it is, you know?
Well, I think that Demetrius wants TJ Dillashaw to fight once at 125 pounds, show that he can make the weight, especially when he's dealing with this incredibly long win streak. He's defended his title more than any other champion ever, so he doesn't want someone to come along and break his win streak that doesn't even make the weight.
Yeah, but this as a... I have thought about this because I've been in a similar situation.
Yeah.
This is a way to take care of this with the lawyers. You write in the contract that if you don't make weight, there's no fight.
Yeah.
And the purse, you make the guy paying you a purse, not the UFC. Dillashaw would take the purse, give the purse. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do. But
you
I
need
think
to be game enough to do it. It's a freaking risk.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think Demetrius is worried that the UFC will pressure him into fighting TJ, even if TJ doesn't make the weight. So if TJ misses
for sure, it will make him look bad in terms of with the fan base and his brand.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. However, he can make it through the lawyer to the. If it's that much weight difference, there is no fight.
Right.
You know, there's always fights, man. Joe, there's something I've learned. Fight can be negotiated the way you want. I can negotiate a fight like depending the laws. Okay, I want you to wear pink Speedos when I fight you. It's in the contract. You have to wear a pink Speedo. I want you to wear this or any, like a fifth round, or if it's, everything could be done if it's written and by the law agreed.
Yeah.
It could be worked out.
I don't think Demetrius...
I hope it will be worked out, man. I'm saying this, guys. Let's do it, man. Let's go.
Well, I think right now the rematch is set for Cody Garbrandt versus TJ Dillashaw, and Mighty Mouse just went through shoulder surgery.
Yeah.
So he's rehabilitating his shoulder. That's going to take quite a while.
And then there's Dominic Cruz too in the mix, man. Yep. He's amazing.
Yeah.
He's amazing. I like to watch him a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of talent in the UFC right now.
The smaller guy are so much better than the bigger guy. Like, I'm telling you the truth. Like if I would have the same size as this guy, man, I don't want to fight this guy, man. They would beat the shit out of me. Like, no, man.
But they don't have gravity fucking with them. Like
I agree.
You.
They don't have the gravity. They don't have the size.
Yeah.
But they're so good, man. It's so good to watch them.
Yeah.
I'm learning a lot. I watch a lot more of these guys than in terms of for learning.
Yeah.
Man, how beautiful was that armbar that Demetrius Johnson
crazy.
Did? Shit, man. It slammed to
slammed to the armbar in the air. And he
I
told
practice
me
it now.
That.
I practice it now. I've been training.
Do you? You
yeah,
practice
I've learned. I learned from these guys, man. I learned from a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
TJ Dillashaw, he switch, man, every time. He's changed angle. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Dominic Cruz, man, his footwork, man, it's
have
insane.
Have you ever trained with Dwayne Ludwig?
Long time ago, yes. I have a spar. We trained when I was in Denver helping Nathan Marquardt for a fight. I spar, man, it was crazy. I spar with Dwayne, Nate, Shane Carwin too. Oh, my God.
You spar with Shane Carwin?
Yeah, man. That was not smart, but I did. Yeah.
Fuck that.
Yeah. That was not smart. That was back in the day, maybe. I should have been smarter.
His hand is as big as your head.
Thanks God I didn't get hurt, but oh, my God. It was, at one point, I remember in a training, he was in ground and pound with another guy that is like a light everywhere. They knock him out. Yeah.
He's
a big monster, but that was stupid of my part. When you're young, you do stupid shit. I should not have done it.
Yeah, fuck that, huh? Yeah. What did he weigh back then?
He weighs... me or him?
Him.
The same. Carwin is maybe like
270.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
Fucking huge.
No, I know it. That was stupid, but I did it and you know... You move, man. You gotta fucking move.
You gotta fucking move.
Yeah, man. Hit, hit and run, man. Hit and run. Don't try to stand in the pocket with this guy. Mm-hmm. And if you go for a takedown, you go in and out and quick, man. Holy shit. Yeah, your timing has to be perfect.
Yeah, fuck that. You only one round?
Yeah, one round.
Whew.
Yeah. As far as we went with everybody, you know, like, and there's this thing, like, I. When we train with other guys, especially I train with everybody. I train with John Jones. We spar with everybody. It's good experience. There's guys that spar like it's their life depend on it. Like it's a real fight. There's other guys, of course, depending if you get ready for a fight or not. And if you depending the situation, but there is when it's just a sparring that you're not in training camp or whatever, you spar, but there's still guys that I see younger guy, they lose a lot of their years of fighting in the gym, because they fight in the gym, man. It's not good for your brain, man.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I never been a big fan of this.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, even now in my last sparring, guys, they come hard at me, but I have to go hard because otherwise they're going to hurt me.
Right.
But that's not because of me. That's because my freaking trainer is telling them, you got to put him away. We're going to praise it. You know what I mean?
So why does Frost do that?
He's completely crazy, Ferraz, man. He's insane. I love him to death, but man, he's completely insane. He's my sensei. He's Pai Mei. I call him Pai Mei. John, I call him the Emperor. The Emperor John, like Star Wars. They all have nicknames.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, man. They're tough guys.
John
is another one. Like when I'm in training camp, man, he put me with Gordon Ryan, Gary 21 after Jake Shield. Like, hey, go. Damn, man. I get smashed. I get out like a pretzel. Like, I'm like, dude, sometimes it's not good for my confidence. Sometimes it is. Sometimes I'm like, shit, man. I have a hard life.
There's
you know?
A darkness inside John's brain.
Yeah, man. And it's hard.
It's dark. He's a hard man.
I made a lot of good change my last for preparation. Like, you know, I used to train like on the ground. I fight round of 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. You're never gonna spend 5 minutes on the ground when you train for an MMA fight. So I did 3 minute round with 1 minute break. It make you and starting from scrambling position, like for example, head and arm control, then go.
Right.
Or mount position, go. We didn't start like shaking and then because you lose time while you're making. So we start from position control and go. So it make you more active. And when you fight, it make you more opportunistic. That's how. And now I teach. I try start to help Ferraz. Like I do it because I love it to help Ferraz. And that's why I teach the people now. No more 5 minute round. When you train for an MMA fight, 2 minute round.
3 minute round and start
man,
from 3 minute
position. Round. You will never spend the entire 5 minute round.
Right.
And the minute that you're gonna spend on the ground, you have to be very economic and very opportunist. When you see something, boom. That's
very
what I get in that fight with Bisping. I see the neck, boom.
Yeah.
I let him stand up, do the leg drag, right away.
Yeah.
I probably would not have reacted the same way a few years ago. It would be more taking a position and safe kind of mentality, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That so was need, a deep need to learn choke, too. That choke was deep. It was this way.
But I practice it a lot because I learned the pattern of Bisping that when you do this, he like to do this. So I predict.
Yeah.
We've worked on it, you know? Like, what I mean? Like, it's stuff that we were. It wasn't in my, like I said, like my autopilot already in my hard disk. So it's just reaction. You don't have time to think. Which before, when you don't train like this, you train in 5 minutes. It's slower pace, so you're thinking more. Jiu-Jitsu is more, it's not much of a dynamic. It's more isometric sport. Sometimes you're dynamic, but it's more isometric and position.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be like this for him. You want to be like bang, 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 fast. And you know what I mean? Make your make you more, you know what I mean, more efficient.
What kind of training are you doing now? I mean, you're going to train with Freddie Roach now. But how much time are you spending training?
I train normally twice a day, every day.
Still?
Yeah. I don't train hard every day, twice a day. Some days I do once a day. I try to train at least 4 days a week that are twice a day and maybe 2 days that are once a day, depending what I do. For example, I'm only going to train once a day. Today is with Freddie. Tomorrow I do this new thing now. It's that really changed my life too. I train in a pool. I don't lift weight.
You don't lift weights?
No, man, I don't. And I still don't believe in conditioning. You say conditioning, I don't believe. I believe it's an illusion. Everybody has it's efficiency. If someone gets tired more than the others because it's more efficient. Because everybody at a certain level is in shape. You know what I mean? But I train in the pool. I do, for example, I have resistance stuff, equipment, and I train in the pool. So it's like my weight training I do in a pool.
Wow.
For example, you do flies. Mm-hmm. So you have protagonist, antagonist muscle that works all the time. And it's like doing flies. But instead of that, you have protagonist and antagonist. You do a fly and a pool in the same time. Push, pull.
And you're doing it with rubber bands? Like what are you doing?
No. It's a resistance
weights?
Equipment. No. Resistance equipment is like a... Shit, I wish I would know
like
you.
Like a cable?
No, it's not a cable. It's like a resistant. It's like a handle. It's a new thing. The Russian developed this like in the 80s, a long time ago, where we just start to learn now about it. And the Russian were way more advanced than us. And it's Gavin McMillan that made me discover this form of training when I rehab my ACL. So he hates weight training. He said weight training, they load up your joint. It damages your joint, you know, depending how you do it. But when you go heavy, it damages your joint. And it's true. That's why I look young and I feel better at 37 now. If it wouldn't be for this, my ulcer, I feel better now at 37 than I feel at 25. Mark my word, it's true. The only difference is, let's say I go out with, like, my birthday was May 19 last Saturday. I get completely wasted, drunk. It takes me more days to recuperate because I'm 37 right. than when I was 25. But strength-wise, like, I feel just more powerful, better. Yeah, man, there's hope for the older man. There's hope that we can last better. We can have a better living.
It's kind of crazy that you don't believe in strength and conditioning.
I don't.
You think that is the thing that everybody does today.
No,
everybody
I don't.
Everybody is involved with strength and conditioning.
Because sometimes they mix up their performance and strength conditioning because of the steroid, I believe. A lot of people, they say, oh, my new nutrition is because of this, or my new training make me be stronger. Look, I'm a better fighter. Oh, man, maybe it's because you taking something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I believe, in UFC, let's say I spar with some pro boxer, okay? For example, like...
Is this you right here?
Yeah, this is one, an example. Yeah.
So you got, look, ankle weights on? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but they create a resistance on the way up, you see? So so it doesn't load up my joint.
And you're just exploding.
Yeah, this is like pistol squat. But there's like 100 like exercise like this. Like I say 100, maybe not 100, but there's so many. Yeah, man. There's stuff you can do with your every part of your body, you can do an exercise.
And this is something the Russians got into.
Yes, and also the NFL football player, a lot train with that because it increases your power. It works. So the thing that you don't have is the stability. But if you want to increase your power, it helps for increasing the power for muscle, the fiber of the muscle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It won't make you a better fighter, but it will, longevity-wise, keep your vehicle healthier. That's why I do strength conditioning. I don't do for making me a better fighter. I do it because I want to look good. I want to be muscular. I want to be balanced. I want to have a longevity. It's not gonna make me hit harder or stronger. Right. Hell no. Freddie Roach might help me hit stronger, for example. Right. You know what I mean? John Danara will make me be more creative, have better arm bars, and Ferraz will make me, you know what I mean, like better fighter in terms of giving me knowledge and different things. That's what I believe. Could be wrong, Joe. Like I know we think different ways in that regard. We argued before about this, but that's what I believe.
I'm open-minded. A lot of times when I'm arguing, I'm just playing the devil's advocate. I don't think there's any one way to do these things.
Like example, I spar, for example, or you're a jiu-jitsu guy, make an experimentation. Go wrestle with a real wrestler, like a high-level wrestler, pure wrestler.
Right.
Wrestle with him. You're gonna get tired much quicker than him.
Right, for sure.
It's not because he's got a better cardio than you, you know, or maybe he is, like depending. But then after that, go on the ground, sit down and shake his hand and start rolling on the ground. I guarantee he's gonna get more tired than you, because if he never done jiu-jitsu, he's gonna spend a lot more energy. You're gonna be much more efficient than him.
Right.
Even though maybe he has a better cardio than you, if you take a VO2 max test, maybe he's gonna score better. However, you're more efficient. It's all about efficiency.
Yeah.
They try to sell you the product. They try to sell you the program. It's all freaking advertising. Our life is made of advertising. That's why I was angry. And I, like we talk about intermittent fasting. Like, there's no pills for this. There's nobody that makes money. Right. That's why nobody talks about it. But it's so efficient. It's the oldest remedy in the world. You know what I mean? In 3 days, you can rebuild your immune system. In your gut, all of it. In 3 days of fasting, you do it. Take Himalaya salt with the water. You go train. It's perfect. You go in autophagy phase. It's the best. You know what I mean? But nobody talks about it. Same thing in cardio and all that. They have to commercialize. Oh, it's the money. It's all about selling you the thing.
Right.
Our life, it's all about branding. Everywhere we go, it's freaking commercial. We're surrounded by commercial if you want it or not. Sometimes we don't even realize it because it's so present in our life. So it's not going to make me a better fighter. I do it because I felt good, develop my muscle, and it's good for me to be, you know, to have muscle for my brand, for me, for advertising, for even for myself. Feel good, you know what I mean? Joe, feel solid, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, that's the real truth. It's not going to make me hit. You think this is going to make me have a better hook? No, man, it doesn't transcend like that.
Right.
Timing, precision, forms, you know, everything. It's not...
If
Joe Louis had the smallest arm, I think, one of the smallest arm, he hit like crazy.
Yeah, he did. He
you know what I mean?
When you look at his build, he wasn't like a Mike Tyson or a Lennox Lewis.
My friend Adonis Stevenson, like, I mean, he's an athlete, but man, I spar with him many times, and he hit like a fucking truck. He's probably the heaviest hitter I've ever seen in my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's not like, he's strong, he's athletic, but there is a guy that looks stronger than him. Or
bodybuilder.
Yeah, because that's because of his form, the way he transfers his weight, his vector of force, everything, his technique, his timing, his precision, everything is perfectly.
It's bone structure too, a little bit too, right? Especially power.
Your freaking back kick, man. Like, this is something, it's not because you're there and I said, the human being that I've hit... that had produced the highest amount of force that I ever witnessed in my life is you, man, with your freak. And I'm not saying this is the truth. I never seen a human being physically capable of hitting something with that much force than you. It's a perfect example of what we argue.
Yeah.
It's not because you're stronger. Yeah, you're a strong guy. You're a good athletic guy. But you know, like, you're older than me, you know? Like, you know what I mean? Like... Why? Because it's your form, the technique, the vector of force, your technique, everything is all freaking perfect, your timing. That's why when you turn and you make that spin, like, rah! I don't care who you are, if you're Francis Ngannou, you hit that shit on the face, you're going to be dead, you know? Not dead, but you're going to be knocked out, man.
Yeah.
This is crazy, you know what I mean? When you did that, it was completely insane, you know what I mean? Yeah, that's the one. Jeez. I'm still working on it, by the way, but I can't do like you do with my knee coming out. I feel like when I do inspiring, the guys, they see it, and they so I have to keep my knee tucked in.
Yeah, I think you're just thinking that.
Maybe it's because the years of karate, I learned in a different way, so my brain is wired so much in a certain way.
Yeah, the problem with karate is that lower knee, the knee down by the other knee versus up by the hip. When you bring it up by the hip, there's much more leverage. There's a tremendous amount of force. And the alignment of your lower leg, the supporting leg, and the kicking leg is better to generate force, whereas the kicking leg is almost independent of the lower leg if you're going up. Because they're not moving in the same direction. Uh-huh. Like one leg is going up, the other leg is going forward. So it's like, it's all goofy. But when the hip is up, when you turn, the hip is up, this is pushing and this is going forward. It's just so boom.
However,
that's
Joe,
where the power comes from.
However, you come from Taekwondo.
Yeah.
Is all the Olympic athlete, like champion,
they don't do it like that.
Yeah.
No, they don't.
Exactly. You do it in a different ways, right?
Well,
but man, I never seen anybody hit as hard. Like, I don't care if it's a punch. I never see a blow from a human being that hard. Man, I remember the bag when you were working in. It was a freaking hole almost in the bag. It was like a curves in the bag, like with your footprint in it. I'm like, it's completely insane, man.
It's a lot of power.
I was with Eddie Bravo, and I remember we were freaking out. Then you were going back and forth, and
know, we worked together because of Donaher.
Yeah.
Because John came up to me and just asking me because I was a commentator.
Yeah.
He said, I need someone to help George with the fundamentals of his spinning back kick. He needs like a technique refresher. Do you know anybody? And I said, this is going to sound crazy. I go, you just got to listen to me. But I have a really good spinning back kick.
So that's how you put it out. He's a smart guy.
I said, he put it to me asking if I knew a Taekwondo guy.
He knew.
He did know.
He knew that he told me he's going to ask if you could work with me.
That's funny because he said it to me asking me if I knew somebody.
No, but you want to put it this way. Johnny's a smart guy. Johnny's a very smart guy. If he would have kind of...
Right.
Because I remember he said that to me, and I say, because he's like my sensei. He's my So I said, right. I'm like, and then I was rolling my eyes like, what the fuck is Joe Rogan? I didn't know what your background, you know? Like, I knew you did
That's
some martial arts.
I thought he was going to think.
No, but he knew... that because the word get around, the word gets around that you have a very strong spinning back kick. He somewhere somehow told him, or he's seen it, or because he told me. I remember he told me. Then I was like, yeah, I'll do it when I go train with Freddie Roach. And then I couldn't believe it. I called him the same night. I said, what the fuck was that, man? It's like. This should be an if he ever fights, man, this should be illegal. He can kill someone with this, man. It's insane, man.
Well, what's fucked up is it almost feels like a lie because it was so long ago. It was a different life. Like, I stopped fighting. I'm 50 years old. I stopped fighting when I was 21. So I haven't fought in forever. So it's just I keep doing it and training, but I haven't done it so long. So when I tell someone that I can do it, I'm like, is that true? I'm like saying, is it true?
How many people did you ever light up someone with that particular?
There's a video of me when I was 19 from a Taekwondo tournament making a guy fly through the air. Yeah.
Are you serious?
It's on YouTube. Yeah, Jamie.
Oh,
Jamie,
my God. Is he okay now? Is he alive?
I don't know. Here it is right here.
Are you kidding me, man?
Yeah, that's a fucking scratchy VHS video from 1986.
Bro, you realize you didn't even... cut him like, you know, we talk about precision, like there was your technique is freaking, but it's so powerful. Like, you cut him where, on the shoulder, on the
no I caught him on the body. It wasn't in the shoulder. You can see it again,
but yeah, that
it's
okay
it's just his arm is underneath his arm, like, oh, as it actually my lands. God. But I saw
but to
him
put
coming
that
forward.
Guy away is because it's very incredibly powerful. Like, a guy would do the same thing, hit him in the same spot, it would probably not get put away like that. Oh, okay.
See, as you see, ooh, like the impact, it goes right into his body, and then I extend, and then when I extended, I was kind of like,
oh yeah, okay, see, no, yeah. that was perfect,
and he just sailed through the air. It's just, it's a crazy, it's got so much power.
Yeah, man.
It's just a crazy technique. And I was raised in a Taekwondo school that came from the old school Taekwondo before tournaments. See, General Che Hyung Yi, he was the inventor of Taekwondo, the founder of Taekwondo, and he trained a small handful of elite instructors. And one of them was Jae Hun Kim, who was my instructor. So my Taekwondo background was old school Taekwondo before Olympic. It was even a consideration. And so everyone trained for power. It was a different thing.
Breaking, yeah.
Yeah, it was you had to be able to defend yourself in the street. My instructor's idea was, if you couldn't hurt someone with a kick, like, why even practice it? Yeah. And these Taekwondo guys in tournaments, they were tapping each other. They were just moving fast, trying to score points. And he hated that shit. He hated that shit. And he felt like you had to load up more. There had to be more power into those techniques. And it wasn't quite as fast as like the really quick style Olympic point style Taekwondo.
Yeah.
But that Olympic point style wouldn't hurt anybody. You couldn't keep them off of you.
But the thing is hard for me. Like, I try to practice it your ways, but I don't know if it's my hips or the way.
No, it's just reps. It's just repetition.
Okay.
We'll go over here after we're done. We're done anyway now.
Freaking hard, man.
We have this gym here. I'll just give you a refresher.
Yeah.
But a lot of it comes from the front leg sidekick.
No, nobody I know. You know, I went back to karate training because I've done Muay Thai, but I was coming from karate background. We've done it straight, not like you, straight. Then in Muay Thai, then I haven't done it for a kick, like back kick, for a long time because they don't really do that much in Muay Thai. But now I went back to karate, my last fight. And when I start to redo it, I've been taught again with the knee.
The knee down.
Yeah, but I like the way you do it, man. It's
crazy. The knee has to be higher. Yeah, the knee has to be higher to get the full power into it.
I just don't have the same efficiency with it.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
But it can be done. You can learn that efficiency.
Shit.
100%.
It's freaking nuts, man.
Yeah, but it comes from learning first the right way to do the front leg sidekick. See, the front leg sidekick, you develop that, boom, that knee comes up, and then boom, it's all in thrusting that hip and popping it forward. And then once you develop the speed from doing that, then you do it with the turn.
Yeah.
Then it's turn, boom. It's the same thing. It's that twist of the hip and the extension of the leg, but then it's also the turn first. So the turn first, boom, and then the extension of the leg. That's where all that power comes from.
Shit.
But it's all in a straight line.
Okay.
And then the 360, when the right leg is forward and you step forward and then throw
that
kick.
Yeah, that was –
that's like getting hit by a train.
Yeah. That's the one that's the strongest I've ever seen. It's insane.
That shit's crazy. So you're running it somewhere.
And you're not even in your prime now.
No, I'm 50.
Shit.
Yeah. But when I was 19, I could do it like a laser beam. Fast.
Yeah.
You know, like in that video. I mean, I was just – that's all I did though. I mean, but from the time I was 15 to the time I was 21, I didn't do shit. I barely did any homework. I didn't pay attention in school at all. All I did was fight. That's all I did was do Taekwondo. That's all I did. I just wanted to be in the Olympics. I wanted to be a Taekwondo champion.
Wow.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to do. But then the problem was I started sparring with kickboxers and getting fucked up. And I realized that Taekwondo has no hands. Like the hand techniques were useless. And when I would be in a boxing ring and I would be sparring with someone, they'd just get me in a corner and start fucking me up. And I was like, oh, I don't know how to do this. Like, I need to learn how to box. And so I realized Taekwondo in a lot of situations is not effective. It's not useful.
Yeah.
Like, I needed to learn how to box first. Yeah. And so then I started training that. And then I started getting training with Muay Thai guys, getting leg kicked. I'm like, ah, fuck. Now this is because we were doing like above the waist kickboxing.
Yeah.
And then I saw Rick Rufus when he fought that Thai fighter. You know, there's a like really important fight when Rick fought this guy and the guy just chopped his fucking legs out from under him. Like, ah.
I saw that fight. However, you put the same fight in the MMA contest. Like, I mean, Rick Rufus beat the shit out of him the first few minutes.
Yeah.
He killed the guy. Yeah. Like, but the guy used kind of the rules to stand back up. Then okay?
Yes.
You put that in the MMA context. That's why the striking in MMA, people say, oh, let's say Mayweather goes into MMA, he'll knock everybody out if they stay standing up. I don't agree with that at all, man.
No, he'll get killed.
Yeah, even
his legs.
Not only the leg, Joe. I think even the hand, the like Randy Couture beat Victor Belfort. Remember with how do you say that in English? Like the
uppercut?
The boxing, the dirty boxing.
Dirty boxing,
Randy Couture, glitching is very different.
It's very
even
different.
The distance. The timing with it, just a small glove, you know, it changed everything.
Sure, man.
Man, I spar a lot with much better decorated pure wrestler than me in MMA. I put them all down. All of them. Not because I'm a better wrestler, it's because my timing, I learned from karate how to close the gap in karate. But I use a karate for the takedown. Some use karate for blitzing and like Wonder Boy.
Yes.
Just depend how you use your tool, you know what I mean?
What do you think about Wonder Boy Till? That's this weekend.
Oh, man, I'm going to watch this fight. I think two things can happen.
How long are you going to be in town for?
I leave on Friday. I got to go back on Friday, unfortunately.
Damn.
Yeah.
Fight's on Sunday.
It's here?
Yeah. No, it's in England, but it's early morning.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
We're going to do a fight companion.
Yeah.
We're going to come in here and watch it.
Yeah, I got to bounce, man. It's because I really have to bounce, but this weekend I have something important this weekend. But man, I need to be in Montreal Saturday. But shit, I would have.
Fight's gonna be
we'll
crazy.
Do it another time for sure.
Let's
we'll
do
like
it for sure.
Normally I watch fight with people that doesn't know nothing about fight. It's fucking
fight
depressing.
Fight companions are fun. We drink a couple beers, watch the fights.
My fight companion are different than, you know, most of my friends are not really fighters or like normal guys, geeks or whatever. You know? they think they know, but they don't know nothing about fighting.
Is that annoying?
Oh, you have no idea of freaking annoying. And I try to be diplomatic. I'm sitting here and everybody's like, hey, why you didn't do this? Why you didn't do that? I'm like, And I used to try to correct them. I used to. But I put so much effort and energy that I just gave up at one point. I'm like, why you didn't do this? Like the fight Tyrone Woodley with Wonder Boy, people, like I was watching the fight, he's like, it's so boring, I can't believe it. It's like, dude, you just don't understand that if Wonder Boy, you go with Wonder Boy and you charge him like this, he would, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to talk about, he's my friend, and I don't want to talk about for Darren Till if he listened to this. Yeah. Wonder Boy is my friend. But they just don't freaking get it. They don't understand. They're not educated about the culture. Like, it's the same thing on the floor. Oh, yeah, why don't you do that? Like, and they have a few fights in the street. It's funny. They're my boys, man. I like them. But a lot of them, like, sometimes I listen. Not all of them, but some of them are like, oh, jeez, man.
Is,
what the hell is this?
It's frustrating.
They think they know, but they don't know, man. A lot of them. They think they know what they don't know. Love you guys, but oh my God, sometimes it's annoying, you know?
Well, listen, George, let's wrap this up, man. Thank you for coming here. I really appreciate it, brother. It's always great to see
you. Thank you, man. Thank you. Is that the real time?
That's the real time.
Holy shoot. Are you serious?
Time flew by. Yeah, we did 3 hours.
Oh my God. Are you serious?
Yeah.
You sure? No, like it can't be the real time.
It's a time warp in here, man.
Dude, that's insane. I need to be to the let me check.
Where do you got
to
go?
I go to the contender of Freddie Roach.
What time are you supposed to be there?
I'm checking. But you needed to train with me. I think I needed to be there at 4:30 before.
You could leave right now.
I think it closed at 4:30.
If you leave now, you could be there by 4:30.
Yeah, but I missed the freaking back kick instructional, which I wanted.
I'll give you a quick one, real quick.
Fuck. Let's fucking do it. You don't mind, Joey?
No. Bye, everybody.
You don't mind, man?